go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new, fresh week of live conversation radio right here on the Horn. I'm Bob. This will be your three-hour dose of live programming for the day. I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll participate in the program. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333. Wonderful to have another evening going live. As I reminded you, I will not be here Wednesday or Thursday of this week, but apart from that, everything else should be as normal as we ever get around here. So take that for what it's worth. And of course, the stock market did another toilet dive today, and we will talk about all that in the next 3 hours. But the reason that the stock market went in the tank again today, you know, some people say it's credit, some people say, you know, it's the currency, other than the price of oil, you know, Frisbees, wheat checks, what have you. But at the end of the day, the reason the stock market went in the tank today has to do with what's been happening to this country for the last 8, yay, verily long, agonizing years. To wit, the presidency of that jug-eared, beady-eyed little lout in the White House, George W. Bush. And I think the conversation should begin this evening, and I'm really glad to have him on the air with us. We're going to begin with an examination of just exactly what the level of criminality is of George W. Bush. On the line with me now, author, noted prosecutor, and at present, advocate for the ideas put forth in his recent book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, Vincent Bugliosi. Mr. Bugliosi, thank you very much for taking time to join us.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me on your show.
It is a pleasure and an honor. Obviously, you have prosecutorial experience in the past. Let me just ask you, where the book is concerned, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, everything has sort of a triggering something or another. At what point in time did you realize you had to put this together?
Well, Bob, you know my prosecutorial record. I've had 21 murder convictions without a loss, and you know I prosecuted Charles Manson for the 7 Tate-LaBianca murders and wrote Helter Skelter, co-authored it. I don't like to see anyone get away with murder, even one murder. O.J. Simpson got away with 2 murders, and I wrote a book, I was so angry, called Outrage, The 5 Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder. So you can imagine the way I feel about George Bush. In my opinion, he's gotten away with a minimum of 100,000 murders, not all of them prosecutable. I'm talking about the thousands of innocent Iraqi men, women, children, and babies who have died not fighting, but in George Bush's war. He's guilty of those murders, but I was unable to establish jurisdiction for him in America to prosecute him for those murders. But I was able to establish jurisdiction here to prosecute him for the 4,000 American soldiers who died fighting his war, not your war or my war or America's war, but George Bush's war. In the book, Bob, I present evidence that proves beyond all reasonable doubt that Bush took this nation to war in Iraq on a lie, under false pretenses, and therefore, under the law, he is guilty of murder for the deaths of these 4,000 young American soldiers over there who have died fighting his war. I put together in the book a legal case against him that could result in his being prosecuted for first-degree murder in an American courtroom after he leaves office. He's got temporary immunity right now. I set forth the legal architecture for the case against Bush, the overwhelming evidence of his guilt, and I hope we have a chance to get into some of that evidence in the show.
We've got as long as you want, Mr. Bugliosi. Okay. I promise you that.
Okay, and the jurisdiction to prosecute him. I told the House Judiciary Committee on July 25th when I testified before Congress that at this stage of my career, I don't have time for fanciful reveries. I never in a million years would propose a prosecution against Bush if I didn't feel there was more than enough evidence to convict him and that I was standing on very strong legal ground. There's one thing I want to mention off the top, Bob, because it's extremely important, could not be any more important. Charlotte Dennett, a viable candidate for Attorney General in the state of Vermont, announced at a press conference with me in Burlington, Vermont on September the 18th, that based on my book, which she had read thoroughly, if she wins the office of Attorney General in Vermont, she will seek a murder indictment against George Bush and appoint me special prosecutor. So what that means, to simplify it, if Dennett wins, I will be taking this case to a grand jury, a special grand jury in Vermont, and I have every reason to believe that I will get an indictment for murder as well as conspiracy to commit murder against Bush, Cheney, and Rice, maybe more. Vermont, by the way, has the highest per capita loss of soldiers in Iraq of any state in the Union, so it's a very fertile state in which to go after Bush. In fact, apparently it's the only state in the Union that Bush has not visited. And I would make this appeal to your audience that since the probability of impeachment is now recognized by most people as, unfortunately, virtually non-existent, an effort is in the works right now, and I hope your audience joins that effort, to get the pro-impeachment people behind the movement to prosecute Bush for murder, and they can only do this by doing everything possible at this moment to get Charlotte Dennett elected Attorney General in Vermont. So if you're listening to the show right now and you want George Bush to be punished for his monumental crime, you have to know that his spending the rest of his life behind bars is far more punishment than his being impeached and removed from office, which should have happened also. Don't get me wrong. He should have been impeached.
Yes, of course. Yes.
But if he were impeached and he left office after conviction, he'd still be a free man and still be permitted to lead a life of privilege for the rest of his days. If you want to prevent Bush from being away with murder, you should support it in any way that you can, including contributing money, because to run a campaign costs money, and we only have about a month left up in Vermont. Do everything you can to elect Charlotte Dennett for Attorney General in Vermont. I'll give you her website.
Sure.
Her website address is Charlotte, that's C as in cat, H-A-R-L-O-T-T-E, Charlotte Dennett, D as in David, E-N-N-E-T-T, for attorneygeneral.com. So we're going now, Bob, beyond the theoretical. In my book is the theoretical, but it sets forth the legal architecture to prosecute him. Now we're talking about something tangible here that could very well happen.
And I want to go into some of those, if you wouldn't mind,
yep.
Sir.
Yep.
First of all, it goes without saying that any judicial act that is non-jurisdictional is moot or void.
Right.
Not
yep.
voidable, but void. How do you confer jurisdiction on the state of Vermont?
Okay. The basic rule is that a court can only have a lawsuit before it if the crime took place within the territorial jurisdiction of that court. That's the basic rule. But there's a well-recognized, well-known exception to that rule, which applies here, and it's called the effects, E-F-F-E-C-T-S, the effects doctrine of the law of nations. In that doctrine, and in the book I have all types of federal and case law on it, that doctrine provides that if something happens outside the state that has a very injurious effect on the people of the state, that state has jurisdiction, even though the crime happened outside the state. I give an example of a Colombian conspiring with someone down in Colombia to rob DEA agents and assault them, and a Florida district court, I guess he ended up in Florida, and they got jurisdiction of him down there, And they prosecuted him for what he did down in Colombia. And, of course, he raised the issue. It was at the federal level. It would be Section 1111, Subdivision B, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, which says that the court only has jurisdiction over matters within its territory, territorial jurisdiction. So he made the argument. He made the argument that this was a violation of 1111, Subdivision B. And the court said, no, what you did down in Colombia had an adverse effect upon this country, attacking DEA agents down there. Now, a fortiori, as they say in the law, all the more so, when we go to war in Iraq, over 4,000 American soldiers have died. It's cost us close to $1 trillion so far. We've lost the respect of the civilized world. There's absolutely no question that the effects doctrine of the law of nations would apply, and I have many cases that I cite.
Is that enshrined in Vermont law?
Pardon?
Is that enshrined in Vermont law as well?
No. I don't know if there's any specific case, but there does not have to be because the U.S. Supreme Court has enunciated this case. Strassheim versus Daley, way back in 1910, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said that a state, it doesn't have to be, you know, Vermont never has had to do this before. They probably have, not in a murder case necessarily, but the Supreme Court has said the state has jurisdiction. If something outside the state has a deleterious effect on the people in the state. Just recently, the dean of the Massachusetts School of Law, Lawrence Velvel, because I spoke at Andover, just gave a blurb for the book, and he said there's no question that Vermont has jurisdiction. That's not going to be, I don't think, the major issue here because the law is pretty clear. It's well established on a federal state level. I think the main legal issue at the trial, if this goes to trial, is whether or not George Bush took this nation to war, as he always claimed, in self-defense, his so-called preemptive strike. Hussein was an imminent threat to security of this country because they had weapons of mass destruction, so we had a strike versus self-defense. If self-defense is established at the trial, then all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq would be legally justifiable. However, if the prosecutor, and that prosecutor may be I, if the prosecutor can prove that Bush did not take this nation to war in self-defense but under false pretenses, then all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq would become unlawful killings and therefore murder. Now, there are many other legal sophistications which I describe or I discuss in depth in the book, but the central issue, I think, is going to come down to whether he took the nation to war as a preemptive strike and self-defense, and the evidence is overwhelming that he did not do so, and I can get into some of that evidence with you if we have time.
Okay, absolutely. And so we've leaped the jurisdictional hurdle. What about, obviously, I don't think we've quite reached banana dictatorship status yet, although it's subject to argument whether we're on the way. You can't try him in absentia. How do you get George Bush into the dock?
Oh, well, he... right now, it might be pretty tough, but he has temporary immunity now. Once he leaves office, the evidence is, I mean, the law is very clear. The U.S. Constitution, and it goes all, not only the Constitution, goes all the way back to the Federalist Papers, 1787, Alexander Hamilton. Once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted like any other private citizen for crimes he committed in office. Nixon, when he resigned in 1974, there was quite a clamor to prosecute him for Watergate-related crimes like obstruction of justice, subornation of perjury, wiretapping. And as you know, President Ford intervened and pardoned Nixon. Now, if Nixon had immunity, there wouldn't have been any need, obviously, for Ford to
Absolutely. And that pardon was history-making and precedent-setting in a very negative way because it was a proactive pardon that had as its grounds no charged crime. So it was, what would you call that, an anticipatory pardon then?
The argument was that Nixon did commit crimes while in office. So I don't know if it was an anticipatory thing. No, the argument there...
But, I mean, there was no standing indictment, no true bill had come down.
No.
Right.
No, no. There was a special prosecutor, which I would be up at... Vermont, Leon Jaworski was the special prosecutor, and he took the case to a criminal grand jury. And it has come out through the years, and it's been pretty well verified, that Jaworski did not ask the Watergate grand jury to indict George Bush. But the main reason, I think, for that is that he was still in office. He was still in office.
Right, because the immunity issue is black-letter law crystal clear, right?
Yeah, once he leaves office, he has no immunity at all.
Right.
But while he was in office, you have the problem of he's still in office, and what do you do? Prosecute him for all these crimes. If he's convicted, then I guess you could impeach him, but...
But so what?
Defend himself
right.
from a jail cell, you know. So the law is that he's got to be convicted in the Senate after an impeachment. Once he leaves office, he's like anyone else. Now, the one difference, because you were saying, you know, how do you get him in the dock? That's under the law. He's a private citizen, no problem at all. But here is one little wrinkle to this thing. In a typical grand jury indictment, 95 times out of 100, the defense attorney makes a motion to quash, it's denied, and you go from indictment to trial. I don't think that's going to happen in this case. After the indictment, which almost assuredly I will get if Charlotte Dennett wins, I think this case is going to shoot all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And I think the court will take it under advisement for several months and probably issue the longest opinion in the history of the court. We already have two people against this, of course. Scalia and Thomas automatically will be doing everything possible to frustrate justice. Now, the dean at the Massachusetts Law School, Velvel, said, Vince, I don't think the court will accept certiorari. It's a writ of certiorari to have the court review what happened down below. And I said, why? And he said, because there'd be such an enormous groundswell of opposition to the court intervening in Vermont that I don't think they'd have the guts to do it. And I said, Dean, they did in 2000, where they intervened in Florida, came up with this cockamamie legal argument of equal protection, which had no merit at all, to hand the election to George Bush. And he came back and said, well, you know, what happened in 2000 is probably one more reason why they wouldn't do it, because they did it back then and caught hell for it. He says he doesn't think it's going to happen. And I said, Dean, in all deference to you, I respect you very much, and you may be right. But I told him that if I get an indictment in this case, I really think it's going to end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, they would have the power to prevent this case from going forward by coming up again with some ridiculous, far-out legal theory. I've anticipated everything in the book, because that's how I used to win my cases, and I've knocked it down. But who knows what they would come up with. But they cannot stop the indictment, at least not in the America we have today. And I have to underline those words, because in my opinion, we're going in the direction, I don't want anyone to misinterpret what I'm saying, we're light years away from fascism, but we are definitely going in the direction of a fascist society. We have to stop it, of course. But if you were to put people like Limbaugh and Cheney and Rove and Scalia and Thomas totally in charge, give them complete discretion, we'd start going more quickly in the area of fascism.
I couldn't agree more, and I might actually... be of the opinion, well, I am of the opinion, that we're closer to fascism than perhaps you're comfortable saying, sir.
Right.
However, let me back you up for just a minute, if we could, please.
Yeah.
I want to try to take, to the extent that we possibly can, I want to make this as linear as possible.
Okay.
But let me ask you a question going back to the immunity, pardons, stuff that we were just talking about.
Right.
And that is, the question is, I have seen it debated back and forth. What is it, in your opinion, constitutional? May the president pardon himself?
Okay.
You know, on the way out the door, let's say.
Yeah, right. The Constitution is silent on that point. However, the majority of constitutional scholars believe that he cannot pardon himself. But I think there's a more important point. When I spoke over at Andover, it was a conference of legal scholars, constitutional scholars, I said something which probably many in the audience already knew, but I got the distinct impression that many did not. I pointed out that under Article 2, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, it's very clear, there's no ambiguity, that a president can only pardon for, quote, offenses against the United States of America, unquote. offenses against the United States, by definition, are federal crimes. If you're prosecuted on a federal level, the complaint or the indictment reads United States of America versus so-and-so. On a state level, like I'm in California, it's people of the state of California versus so-and-so.
Exactly.
So he would have, someone would have the power, or maybe he could pardon himself, although, as I say, the indication is that he can't, but someone would have the power to pardon him for the federal murder statute, which is 18, Title 18, U.S. Code, 1111, Subdivision A. They'd have that power. They would not have the power to pardon him for the state murder statute. So even if, assuming arguendo, to use a legal term, that he could pardon himself, it would only be for the federal murder statute, not for the state murder statute up in Vermont.
Okay, okay. That being the case, what you said a couple of minutes ago about the Scalia, Thomas, perhaps Alito, Roberts connection, and
right.
some loopy legal theory,
right.
Is it conceivable that they would intervene with some sort of argument that would remove it to federal jurisdiction so as to dismiss the indictment?
If there were a concurrent prosecution, by concurrent I mean both the federal and the state authorities went after George Bush, under the Supremacy Clause, the state would have to defer to the federal government. However, if the state acts first, I don't see how the federal government could start a lawsuit against him afterwards. But look, I would rather see the federal government prosecute him. Why? Because, you know, when you go in a state, like in Vermont, I was saying it had the highest per capita loss of soldiers, but we're talking about a small number. I'd like to have the indictment name the victims, and on a federal level, it would be over 4,000. I think the most natural place to prosecute him would be at the federal level. So if they intervene and say, we want to do it at the federal level, fine. But they could not say it can only be done at the federal level because of the effects doctrine of the law of nations, which is very well established. Vermont has jurisdiction. But if, under some theory, they would intervene and say, we want to do it, I'd say, fine. I established jurisdiction in the book for a great number of prosecutors. On a federal level, which is where I'd like to see the prosecution, but I don't talk about it too much because I don't think it's going to happen at the federal level. It's a highly politicized office, the Attorney General. Whether he's Democrat, Republican, it's politicized. Bush can be prosecuted for two crimes under both federal and state law, murder and conspiracy to murder. On a federal level, we're only really talking about one prosecutor, and that's the Attorney General in Washington, D.C., operating through his Department of Justice. Now, there are 93 U.S. attorneys throughout the country who theoretically could go after Bush, but as a practical matter, they're not going to do it without getting the consent of their boss in Washington, D.C. So on a federal level, realistically, Bob, we're only talking about one prosecutor. But on a state level, and I've spent a great number of hours of research on this, on the jurisdiction issue at the L.A. County Law Library and the Ninth Circuit Law Library, I've established jurisdiction on a state level for the Attorney General in each of the 50 states, plus approximately 2,700 district attorneys and counties within those states to prosecute Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from their state or county who died fighting George Bush's war in Iraq. Now, with all those prosecutors out there, and with all the evidence of guilt, which we still haven't gotten into yet, with all the evidence of guilt against George Bush, I don't think it's too unreasonable to believe that there's at least one courageous prosecutor out there who's going to say, hey, this is the United States of America. And in America, no man is so high that he's above the law. The evidence of Bush's guilt is clear, so I'm going to go after him and bring about justice for the American people. And let's not forget that there's no statute of limitations for the crime of murder.
Absolutely not.
Pinochet, down in Chile, 31 years later, they brought murder charges against him, and of course his death aborted the prosecution. So what I'm saying is that if Charlotte Dennett does not win in Vermont, let's hope and pray she does.
Yes.
But if she doesn't, I'm not going to stop at that. I can tell you this. Maybe it sounds presumptuous, but I can tell you this. I may not succeed, but I'm not going to be satisfied until I see George Bush in an American courtroom being prosecuted for first-degree murder. And if he's convicted, it'll be up to the jury to decide what the appropriate punishment is, one of their options being the imposition of the death penalty. This man cannot get away with what he did, but the nation seems to be going in that direction. Nothing is being done against Bush, nothing. No impeachment, no investigation of him by Congress or Department of Justice, nothing.
Well, I know it's probably beyond the scope of our conversation, but I see the media as having been complicit in that simply because no one ever took the time to commission polling data on whether or not he should be impeached. So I don't think that's a failure of the law or the failure of the Constitution. It may be a failure of Congress, but it's certainly a failure of the media.
Well, if you want to talk about the media, are you aware that this book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, was blacked out by the mainstream media? Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am. That's part of the reason you're on this program.
Yeah.
we try to pick up where they fail.
Right. The book is a New York Times bestseller, but it's a New York Times bestseller for two reasons. One, it's gotten tremendous word of mouth. And two, it's people like you, Bob, who've had me on the show. But I had a very difficult time getting this book published. And I've had three books that got up the number one on the New York Times hardcover bestseller list in true crime. No other American author has had more than one. I've had three. This year, I just won for a record-breaking third time the Edgar Allan Poe Award for Best True Crime Book of the Year, Reclaiming History, The Assassination, President John F. Kennedy. Tom Hanks and his people are doing a 10-hour miniseries on it for HBO. So I've never had any trouble getting a book published. This book, I had a very difficult time getting it published. I had to fly back to New York City, knock on doors. It was very obvious to me that the publishers were frightened. They'd say things like this to me: "Mr. Bugliosi, are you sure you want to publish this book?" One of them put it in black and white, too hot to handle. I finally found a courageous publisher, Vanguard Press. They published it. Now we go down to the audio level. I never gave it a second thought. It was an automatic, like Reclaiming History, Simon & Schuster did. This time I get a call from my agent. "Vince, I cannot find any audio company in America who's willing to do the audio on this book." So we got the British Broadcasting Company, the BBC, to do the audio. Right now, as I'm talking to you, Bob, there's a documentary in production based on my book for the big screen. The producers couldn't raise one penny in America. The money had to come in from Canada. With all my other books, true crime books, automatically fly back to New York City, start out on network, cable, TV.
The circuit, sure.
I didn't start out this time. I didn't fly back to New York City. No network or cable TV show would have me on. To this day, no major newspaper has reviewed the book. First time in my career. My publicist back there has been in the business for over 30 years. She said, "I've never, ever seen a book blacked out like this." It got so bad, Bob. Listen to this. It got so bad that ABC Radio refused to take money from my publisher to take out a radio spot on ABC Radio. So I went off on a little riff here, but you were mentioning that the media is complicit, and here's an example of it. Clinton does virtually nothing at all, consensual sex outside of marriage, tries to cover up.
Sure.
And what do they do to him? Well, I don't have to tell you, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, the media, mainstream media, savaged him, including the so-called liberal New York Times and Washington Post. The monstrous, grotesque, obscene Ken Starr did everything within his power to destroy the Clinton presidency. And listen to this, because this makes it much, much worse. Who financed Ken Starr's seven-year, $70 million effort to destroy the Clinton presidency? United States government.
Yeah, the people of the United States.
Effort.
Yeah.
That's right. Clinton was impeached, almost driven from office. The right wing wanted to hang him in the town square at noontime for doing nothing, just sublime silliness. And yet Bush puts thousands upon thousands of people in their cold graves right now as I'm talking to you, and no one has done anything at all to George Bush. But let me add, so far.
Right.
If Charlotte Dennett gets elected in Vermont on November 4th, things are going to change. Things are going to change in America.
Well, I want to go into the merits of the case here in just a minute, Mr. Bugliosi. Let me ask you, though, if he is guilty of the murders of those who have died in this disastrous nightmare in the sand, then is he not also guilty of, and I don't know how it would be referred to in various other jurisdictions. I'm in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Here we call it malicious wounding. In other words, can you not allege some level of criminal culpability to him for those who survived their injuries as well?
Of course. Whether I would do that or not, I have not decided yet. But when you're going after someone for first degree murder, it's I won't say, I don't know what the word would be, but it kind of weakens the case.
I understand that. The only thing that occurred to me is that the dead can't testify.
Well, they don't have to testify in any murder case. The dead do not testify. So I'm not worried about that. That's something, but it would elongate the trial tremendously because now you're talking about not just 4,000 American troops. You're talking about 30,000
right.
who were disabled for life. You're talking maybe about over 100,000 that have had psychic wounds, the hidden wounds.
Yeah, I was, Mr. Bugliosi,
I don't know if I would get into that. Yeah,
I was thinking of it in terms of those 2,000-plus prosecutors you were mentioning a few moments ago.
Right.
Where that might put something, I suppose, and I hate to even use these kind of terms, but a different spin on any individual prosecution. But I certainly understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's do get after, if you don't mind, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but as much time as you need, you have from me, okay? In other words, you control the clock.
Okay. Let me just mention something. Are you going to a break now? Or what?
No.
Okay. Here's an interesting thing. It's very interesting. The European countries, they know what's going on, okay? Have you ever heard of ARD? ARD is German National Television. It's the equivalent of the BBC. They were at my house last week, for 2 hours interviewing me, and then they flew back to interview Charlotte Dennett. This evening, it was originally scheduled at 4, they're flying out here now, maybe at 6, Russian TV is interviewing me. It's called the Russia Today. It's a huge show in Moscow. So they are very much aware of the importance of what's happening in Vermont. And yet the mainstream media here continues to refuse to do anything about it. Although I'll say this, the Republican National Committee, they've gotten involved and they've taken a shot at Charlotte, and I prepared a response to it. So the fact that the RNC took notice, they know if she gets in, something very serious is going to happen. Briefly, going over the some of the evidence that I have, and I presented it to Congress when I testified on July 25th. I have documentary evidence, and by the way, to my knowledge, what I'm about to say has never appeared in any major newspaper or magazine in America. It may have appeared elsewhere in America, probably did, but not, to my knowledge, in any major newspaper or magazine. Why? Probably just sheer incompetence. I have documentary evidence that when George Bush told the nation on the evening of October 7, 2002, Cincinnati, Ohio, that Hussein was an imminent threat to security of this country, he was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA had told him 6 days earlier in a classified top secret report of October the 1st, that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country, that he'd only be a threat if he feared an imminent attack on him by us. In other words, he'd only be a threat if he was forced to fight in self-defense. But it gets worse. October the 4th, 3 days later, Bush and his people put out an unclassified summary version of the classified October 1st report so they could give it to Congress and the American people. And this unclassified version came to be known as the White Paper. And in this White Paper, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country was completely deleted. Every single one of those all-important words was taken out. So Congress and the American people never saw any of this. Now, Bob, since we are talking about a matter of war and peace, with the safety and lives of millions of human beings at that time hanging in the balance, and with Congress about to vote in just 1 week, that was October 11th, on whether or not it should authorize George Bush to go to war in Iraq, I ask you, what, and I asked the House Judiciary Committee, I said, what could possibly be worse, I repeat, what could possibly be worse and more criminal than the Bush administration deliberately keeping this all-important conclusion from Congress and the American people? I got a phone call on June 16th at my home here in L.A., from a very conservative Republican congressman from the South, voted for the war, one of the staunchest supporters of the war. And he said, Mr. Bugliosi, I listened to your book on tape. You've convinced me that George Bush misled Congress into war. I've bought several copies of your book. I'm handing it out to colleagues on the Hill, telling them, read the book. We've been lied to. This congressman, you'd probably be surprised if I mentioned his name, very prominent. He said, you know, he's coming up for re-election. He said, come the election. He said, I'm going to go public, and I want to be by your side if and when George Bush is prosecuted for first-degree murder. That's a very conservative Republican congressman from the South. He learned in reading my book that that conclusion that I just told you about was deleted. And I told Congress there were other things that were deleted. I'll just mention one. In the area of nuclear arms. I showed Congress this document right here, that's the classified document. I said, that had several dissents. I said, this document right here, you folks, maybe I shouldn't call them folks, I said, this document right here, the white paper that you folks got, all of those dissents were deleted. And the guy sitting, not the guy, the congressman, the ranking minority member from Texas, I think his name was Lamar Smith. He was on Conyers' left. By the way, Conyers is reading the book, likes it very much. Anyway, he literally said to Conyers, and you can get it on YouTube, there's 150,000 hits on this. I don't have a computer myself, but apparently it's on YouTube. He started yelling, and I couldn't hear exactly what he was saying, but it's been picked up on YouTube. And what he said to Conyers is worse than the effect, if you don't shut him up, referring to me, I, referring to himself, I'm going to have an aneurysm. He was that upset.
Oh, my God.
And then he turned on me and he says, you're getting into classified information, Mr. Bugliosi. I said, no, you are wrong, sir. This document right here that I'm holding up was classified. It was declassified. And this white paper here was never classified. And the media spoke to me later and they said, why were they trying to shut you down? I said, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you exactly why they were trying to do it. I said, because these Republicans are phonies, they are much more Republican than they are American.
I couldn't agree more.
That's why they were trying to shut me down. These people that have taken over the Republican Party, this is not the Republican Party that I knew when I was growing up. We always had these nuts, always. But they used to be on the fringes. And they were an embarrassment to the Eisenhowers and the Nixons and the Fords and even Bush's father. They were an embarrassment. Now they've taken over the party. And they are the most repugnant, un-American, unpatriotic people of all in our society. I'll just give you one example. I could give you many, many more.
I don't doubt it.
When it was their time to fight for America, the Vietnam War, what did they do? I'm talking about the Bushes and the Roves and the Cheneys and the Limbaughs.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we often refer to Cheney as Five Deaf Dick.
Right. They ran like hell in the opposite direction. That's what they did. But now they have no hesitancy waving the flag. They don't want to fight for the flag, but they have no hesitancy waving the flag and shedding the blood of other people's children in Iraq. And I'm going to tell you something that may sound like an opinion, and maybe that's all it is. But in my belief is that it's a fact, what I'm about to tell you. Because George Bush is a conservative Republican, and so are they, anything he does, anything at all, including murder, is just fine with them. Now, that may sound like an opinion, but I feel it's a fact. These are despicable people. And what have they?
Well, it's an argument we've made on this program a number of times, Mr. Bugliosi, to the extent that George Bush could be seen shooting down children on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
And the right-wing Republicans would find some reason to excuse the conduct.
Yeah, I say in the book that he could be caught sodomizing a goat on the front lawn of the White House, and they'd say, well, you know, he loves animals, you know. Anything he does. So these are despicable people, and they've transformed this country, Bob. They've transformed it, in my opinion. I'm getting into an opinion now, but the other thing I think is a little more than an opinion. Into a country where, for the first time ever, many everyday Americans no longer feel 100% comfortable and safe in America. People capitulate. They yield to fear. They cater to those who are the source of the fear, like the schoolyard bully. When you have a very decent, honorable man like Mario Cuomo saying, quote, I respect Rush Limbaugh, unquote. Limbaugh is an uncommonly loathsome human being, and if I may be so presumptuous, Cuomo does not respect Limbaugh. How is that even humanly possible? But that's just one example among a great number of the shadow of fear that has descended upon this once great nation. And it'll be a step forward for all of us, certainly in the eyes of the world, if we go after George Bush. We can hardly retain the stature that we once had in the world when people used to look up to us, now they look down, if we don't take the first step of bringing those responsible for the war in Iraq to justice. And that's what I've dedicated myself to doing.
Well, I'm glad that you have. And there needs to be more of it. It should be screamed from the rooftops as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Bugliosi.
I appreciate that, sir.
Where this prosecution is concerned, if I understand you correctly thus far,
yeah,
you're describing a situation in which you would basically, at trial,
right,
prove the falsity of the mendacity even of the decision to make war upon the people of Iraq. Would that by definition therefore be an element of the offense?
No. You're a very bright fellow, Bob, if I may tell you that. You ask some very good, tough questions, okay, that I'm not accustomed to getting. Here's the element. Here are the elements of murder. Murder is an unlawful killing with malice aforethought. That's the state of mind, malice aforethought. Can be either express or implied. In this case, the express malice would be doing something where Bush absolutely knew the deaths of American soldiers would follow. Unless he's going to make the argument, which would be silly on its face, that he was contemplating a war without casualties. Implied malice is where you don't intend to have anyone killed, but you intend to do an inherently dangerous act, which certainly is war, with reckless disregard for the consequences and indifference to human life. Those are the two elements, not the lies. Those are the two elements. However, here's where we get into the lies. Bush could have either one of those two states of mind, express or implied malice, but they would not be criminal if he was acting in self-defense. If A shoots B to kill B, okay, it's murder. If A shoots B to kill him, but he was doing it in self-defense, the same act of shooting B is no longer murder. It's justifiable homicide.
Exactly.
The same act.
Right.
So you asked a tough question. I get into much more depth in it in the book. But the lies are not an element of the corpus delicti of murder. But what they do they make the malice aforethought criminal. Because if you're taking the nation to war under false pretenses, then what's your defense? A person acting in self-defense is not going to be lying about it. They don't have to. They don't have to. Let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about here. I don't know if you're following my argument that if you're acting,
no, I am.
If you're acting in self-defense, why are you lying to everyone as to why you're
doing
it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Now let me give you an example, and this would come out at the trial. Let me give you words from George Bush's own mouth, his own lips, that he knew he was lying to the American people when he told them that Hussein was an imminent threat to security of this country. The date is January the 31st, 2003. Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office for 2 hours with six of their top aides, one of which was Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning. After the meeting, Manning prepared a five-page memo. We're not talking about the Downing Street memo. No, that's over in England, and that's
sure,
a little ambiguous.
Sure.
I would introduce it, but it's not that strong. This is what I'm telling you now is not nearly as well known, extremely powerful. It's called the Manning Memo. He prepares this five-page memo stamped extremely sensitive in which he summarized what was said at the meeting. And among other things, he said that Bush, not Blair, but Bush, was so worried about the failure of UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that Bush started talking about three possible ways to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which ways, Bush said, was to, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, painted, obviously falsely, in United Nations colors.
Right, that baby blue.
And he said if Hussein fires upon them, he'll be in violation of UN resolutions, and this will justify our going to war. Now, what we're saying here is this. Bush is telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein is an imminent threat to the security of this country, so we have to strike first at self-defense. But behind closed doors, this very small human being was talking about how to provoke Hussein
into shooting first.
Into a war. Now, if Bush genuinely and sincerely and actually believed that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, which is the main reason he gave the American people for going to war, the thought of trying to provoke Hussein into a war would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. Now, how is he going to get around that?
And it's also a desperate waste of time, if in fact the threat is imminent, is it not?
It's what? Say this again.
It's also the provocation for the casus belli, shooting at the U-2s or whatever, is also a waste of precious time, if in fact the threat is imminent.
Of course. If it's imminent, why are you trying to provoke war? I mean, someone acting in self-defense, the last person in the world they try to provoke is a person who's about to kill them. Follow?
No, absolutely.
You don't try to provoke that person who's about to kill you.
You don't slap the guy with the gun and say, don't hurt me.
But I'd have to call Manning to the witness stand. Dennis Miller's radio show.
Okay.
And
that had
Dennis,
to be a joy.
Kind of tough on Dennis in the book. I've known Dennis for years. And in any event, and I make fun of him in the book. I said that I was embarrassed for him, and that's when I was on his show. The only thing he disagreed with me on, he said, you know, you were embarrassed for me. That's kind of a chop. Worse than that, he didn't like my saying that that I was embarrassed for him. But the things where I attacked him, and I did it in as nice a way as I could. He didn't challenge me on. Anyway, I talked about the Manning memo, and I said, now Dennis, you're defending George Bush at the trial. And I just put David Manning on the stand to testify what your guy did, what he said on January 31st, 2003. You're the defense attorney. What would you do, Dennis? Dennis is a pretty bright guy. He's fast. He said, I'd ask for a recess. Well, no matter how long that recess went on, whether it's for, you know, an hour, a day or a week or a month, there is no answer to the Manning memo except guilt. If he felt that he was, we were about to be attacked by Hussein, we got to strike first. What's he talking about trying to provoke Hussein into a war? I have much more evidence in the book on it. It's about 10 to 4, and I'll probably have to wrap this up, but I do, by the way, the emotional underpinning for this book is that the fact that he caused all these deaths, but the evidence is overwhelming, cannot be disputed, that at the same time the young American soldiers, I'm talking about 18, 19 years old,
sure,
kids, Bob,
yeah,
who never had a chance to live out their dreams, were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq. This guy, George Bush, was having a lot of fun and enjoying life to the very fullest. And you don't have to take
we're gonna get him. Now watch this shot.
Yeah, right. You don't have to take my word for it or all the examples I give in the book or the photos of Bush in the book having a ball. And I juxtapose that next to the American and Iraqi people who have died over there. I've had people with high blood pressure, I'm not exaggerating, tell me, Vince or Mr. Bugliosi, I cannot read more than 4 or 5 pages of your book. I have to put it down. I get so angry. But George Bush himself has had no hesitancy in saying things like this. And while I'm going to quote Bush, I want you to try to think, Bob, try to imagine in your mind Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon during their respective wars saying something like this, and also realize that at the very same time he is uttering these words, the death and the horror and the suffering going on in Iraq, I mean the sea of blood, the screams, the decapitations, the mutilations of the bodies, as he's saying these words. Listen to these words. These are just some of them. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. He's saying this right in the middle of all the horror.
Oh, I know.
I'm in a great mood. It's going to be a perfect day. Bob, I can tell you, if I ever killed a human being, even accidentally, like in a car accident, I'd never have another perfect day for as long as I live. And this person here is responsible for well over 100,000 human beings dying horrible deaths, and he says, it's going to be the perfect day. In December 2007 at the White House, press conference.
Well, and see, I understand that you do have to go, Mr. Bugliosi.
Okay.
I want to thank you for your time, however, I'm going to get a copy. I'm going to get my hands on a copy of this book, and I'm going to hand it to my county prosecutor. I'm just going to do it.
That's what people are doing.
I can't help noting, though, on the way out, because of the work you did. I mean, my goodness gracious, I can't remember how many years ago it was that I read Helter Skelter. I think you're dealing with a similar personality type, sir. That's a conversation with a different expert, but I think we're dealing with sociopaths in either instance, and that's how he's able to say that it's a wonderful day.
Yeah. You may be right. Please have your audience look at CharlotteDennettForAttorneyGeneral.com. She needs your help up in Vermont, and if you want to see Bush punished, you got to help her in any way you can. Okay?
We absolutely will, and I hope people will pick up the book and also go to CharlotteDennettForAttorneyGeneral.com. Vincent Bugliosi, thank you very much, sir. I hope we can have another conversation perhaps the day after you've impaneled the jury, sir.
Thanks a million, Bob. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
It has been my pleasure and my honor, sir. Take care.
Okay, sir.
Bye now. Vincent Bugliosi, prosecutor extraordinaire, author, and in this case, author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. You can get it through the Horn store, go through our portal to Amazon, get it, read it, then, having armed yourself with the facts and information inside it, give it to your county prosecutor and insist as his boss that he or she read it. That's really all I can say on the matter. It's a fascinating book, and I urge, you know, and it's not all lost in the legalisms. Part of Mr. Bugliosi's genius as a prosecutor was his ability to make legal issues cognizable to juries. And you can't stand up there and say, well, res ipsa loquitur, e pluribus unum, thank you, the prosecution rests. It has to be very real communications with the jury. And this is a book that will pull a lot of what we have long thought about George W. Bush into a very tight and very stark focus. So that is the first hour of this Monday program, and what an hour it was. I welcome you to join in the conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. We'll take a little break, and we'll start up with your calls the minute we come back. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. I can't see it rain from mine. Frogs on the side of the highway. And scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18 was too early. Maybe 30 or 40. Your chance to make peace with the man, or is something on his angels? Mamas and grandmamas love you, 'cause that's all they know how to do. Never planned on the bombs in the sand, or sleeping in your home in a week. Turn 22 and we'd celebrate you in a bar or 10 by the creek. Baby, we're just about be here, and your very last tour would be up. You won't be back.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Again with the second hour. It's about a minute and a half past the hour here in the studio. Lord only knows what time it is by the time we calculate in all the latency and delay inherent in the internet. But then, you know, if you're listening in podcast or archive, thanks. Of course, all podcasts and archives are available at whiterosesociety.org. That is, of course, the streaming. Ben Birch is the literally, no doubt about it, this is not damning with faint praise. I seldom use this word. Ben Birch is the genius who makes the stream go out and makes the archives do what they do and the podcasts and all of that. So if you're listening later, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you're listening live, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Vincent Bugliosi. And per his request, please visit the website as mentioned, Charlotte Dettner. For attorneygeneral.com. I don't know about you, but I would like to see George W. Bush deal with an ongoing string of indictments for the rest of his natural born days. And had we not run out of time, I should very much have liked to ask Mr. Bugliosi what he would think of treating George Bush like Slobodan Milosevic or any other common gutter-level war criminal, and taking him to The Hague and laying out every last blessed bit of evil that he had ever been a party to. But I will be more than happy to start with one prosecution for all the murders. Because like Mr. Bugliosi, I hate seeing somebody get away with it. Just hate it. Let's go to the phones. I hope you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Thank you for having him on. I just really appreciate that. Thank God for him.
Somebody's got to say this stuff, and the fact that it is being so thoroughly ignored, blacklisted, whatever you want to say about it, by the for-profit media tells you everything that you need to know about its validity and its seriousness.
Yeah. On my website, I've got, like, recommended books, and his is one of them. It's been recommended, you know, I've recommended that for a long time.
Well, I saw someone mention, I think it was Nanette in the chat room, she mentioned that she had seen him on C-SPAN.
Yeah. He was, I saw him one time where he was telling the audience was for him, you know. I think it was in San Francisco, and he was telling them, you know, how he couldn't get on the regular mainstream media or whatever, and they said, you don't need to. We're all you need. We're going to support you.
Well, I think if people buy the book and then give it to their county prosecutor or their state attorney general, you know, I'd love it if my attorney general in West Virginia couldn't. I'd love it if
who our state attorney general is?
Sadly, no, but I'm guessing he's some godforsaken right-wing Republican.
Well, he was one of the guys against Clinton, Republicans against Clinton, McClellan or something.
Oh, mercy.
Not McClellan, McCollum. I forgot.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'd love for my attorney general, whom I respect, by the way, I'd love for my attorney general not to be able to get in through the doors of his office because of the stacks of copies of this book.
Anyway, I just one thing I wanted to say was if you hear from Katie,
Kate, it's Kate
or Katie?
It's Kate.
Okay.
I just heard from her today. She has made it all the way down to the Mississippi Gulf
okay.
Coast.
Okay. Well, that's I'm calling. I saw a debate this morning of Roger Wicker. He's a Republican from Mississippi, and he's running against a guy that used to be governor there. The other guy's a Democrat. And I just wonder if she agrees with him, this Roger Wicker, how he went down there on his own on the coast to see that things got done, rebuilt and all. And he just is so thankful for Barber, the governor. Barber, you know.
Oh, dear Lord.
Millie Mouth. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. The mere mention of Haley Barber's name. Well, I'm sure she's either listening live or she will be listening.
Everything was just wonderful down there now, according to this Roger Wicker.
That's probably because he's a member of Congress and hasn't been to the Gulf Coast lately. Or that, or he just went to the casinos.
I think he might be a senator. I don't know which, but I just watched the debate and just, you know, I just there once in a while.
Oh, is this the guy who's running for Trent Lott's Senate seat?
It might be.
Well, we need, we need him in there, but he's dead wrong about this.
What about the Democrat?
Well, that's what that's what I'm saying. I thought you were talking about the Democrat who's running for Trent Lott's Senate seat.
Maybe it might be. I don't know. Oh, yeah, the Democrat's not good.
No, no. Oh, we're getting terribly twisted around, Juanita. I thought you were talking about the guy who is running for that Senate seat, who is a Democrat.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. Oh. No, Roger Wicker is Republican.
Oh, no, then he's a moron.
Then he might be Congress. I'm sorry.
Well, here, I'm looking him up real quick.
Okay. But just ask her if he's got everything fixed down there.
Okay, there we okay. Yeah, he's a Republican, and he is currently Mississippi's junior member of the United States Senate. Okay, there we go.
Okay,
yeah,
I thought he was a senator.
Yeah, he's a moron.
But there's a guy running against him.
Right, there's a Democrat running against him who could very well win.
Yeah, I think his name is Musgrove or something.
There we go. Okay, we're getting it all untangled now.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, ask her if Roger Wicker's got everything fixed down there.
Okay, well, I think you just asked her yourself.
Thanks to Barbara.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because Haley Barber's the.
Oh gosh, I can't stand that man. And another, these are just little things to tell you, but another thing in the debate, I watched that debate again today. Can you believe it?
You know what I've watched over and over again is the debate that as NBC staged it on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
That was much closer to the truth. But, you know, people, we're beginning to find out more and more. You remember when Caribou Barbie was talking about how she, oh, you know, golly gee, don't you know, I heard about the business going on with those people in the Sudan, and I came right home and I said, oh, we can't be having any investments with companies doing business with the Sudan, don't you know? And I, by golly, I got us right out of there. Remember that? Well, it turns out she was lying.
Well, I noticed something. You know how she asked Joe if she could call it Joe to begin with, and of course she didn't throughout. And of course I think Tina Fey got it right, you know, that she was going to use it against him. For the little cutesy sayings.
Say it ain't so, Joe.
But anyway, she said, one time she called, she said something about, and it's what it sounded like, maybe I didn't hear it right, but she said something about Obama and Biden. I swear she said that.
I saw a flow chart today on BartCop.com, Juanita, that was just precious. it was about how she did her debate prep.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I mean by a flow chart, of course. It's boxes with little arrows running, you know, from one arrow from one box to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just exquisite because it was dead on for what that so-called debate turned out to be. Because it all ended up with, "Hey, I'm sure a great debater, aren't I?" And I think the box under that was, "Do something cute." Yeah, and I've seen her referred to now as the Winky Dink.
She's referred to as a lot of things. I told my son, I said, they won't have to write any kind of a script. They got plenty.
Oh, I know. She's a walking disaster. Sarah Palin debate flowchart. See if you can, let's follow along here. One, repeat the question to buy yourself time.
Yeah.
Is that question on your index card? Yes. Recite the notes from that index card. Oh my God, you're such a good debater. And then there's, is that question on your index card? No. Oh, poop. Do you know anything about this topic? Yes. Wait, really? No. Do you have a card that is vaguely related? Yes. Recite the notes from that index card. Oh, my God, you're such a good debater. Or, do you have a card that is vaguely related? No. Uh-oh. Does the question have any of those words John made you memorize? No. Can you tell a heartwarming hockey mom story? You betcha. Give your canned response, even if it ignores the question.
Yeah.
Did that take 90 seconds? No. Well, crap. Say that John is a maverick. How about now? 90 seconds yet? Yeah. No. Do something really cute. Oh, my God, you're such a good debater.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, I'll tell you. But I tell you, when I watched it, when it happened, I was just so uptight.
I know. Well, you know, we had it all rolling live here, and I was just having, I think I was all the way up to like 3 hissies per second or something like that. It was beginning to make me quiver in my seat.
But you know what? Every time I hear her talk, at least 90% of what she says is a lie.
Oh, I think I think those are the honest answers where it's only 90% a lie.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's 100% it's a lie.
I know.
Like the business with Sudan. It turns out, not only did she not order the divestment of the Alaska investment fund from Sudan, she actively opposed the effort to divest.
Well, did you hear what she's saying about Obama?
Which now? That he pals around with terrorists?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just pretty doggone disgusting.
And I heard questioned her about it. She said, oh yes, it's true. And they're using her as an attack dog. And on The View today, they've got all been out of shape about that. Elizabeth did, and Barbara was there. And Barbara said, you know, they're bringing out about the Keating Five and all.
Mm-hmm.
She said, look, I know that happened, 17 years ago or something? And she said the other was 40 years ago. She said, why can't we let those things go by? You know, because, like, didn't Miss Sarah say that we need not to look at the past?
Well, she did. Oh, there you go, Joe, looking into the past again. We're going to maverick up this here White House, hey?
Uh-huh. And, of course, as she asked Elizabeth, Elizabeth said, I don't care. And she said, you don't care with Barbara said, you don't care with all the troubles that we're having in this country, in the world, that you don't care. I've been reading a lot on the Internet that they're having, like, discussions. But it's all right for her to say, like when they were down on Michelle, every time they've been down, well, she asked to get into this, but no, you don't talk about Sarah. It's picking on Sarah. Picking on
Sarah. Well, see, that's the whole design, Juanita,
uh-huh.
Because she's a girl, and,
Michelle.
She's a woman, But, you know, you can't pick on her because that's picking on poor little Sarah, and everybody knows that she's not that she's not the sharpest jelly knife in drawer. But on the other hand, on the other hand, she can sling mud with the best of them. And they think they've got the perfect shield set up, what I'm getting at.
Yeah. It really is something else, I'll tell you. But I don't know, after last week with them passing that thing, and I really wasn't surprised. I figured NASA would give it to them, all that money.
Yeah, and looky there. Look what the Dow did today. Did you catch that, Juanita?
Yeah, I heard that.
Let's see. What was the final close? Yeah, down 369.88 points. At one point, it was down as much as 800. Pardon?
I heard some people say that wasn't so bad. I don't know.
Well, it's not as bad as what it was earlier in the day. It was down almost 800 points.
Yeah.
So, I guess if you're one of those glass half full types, only 369 is, hey, it's a great day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all this is it's just making room to suck up all of our money that's going into that Ponzi scheme. What's the guy's name? Yeah. Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, is apparently tapping a guy by the name of Neil Kashkari, who is a 35-year-old guy who's going to be in charge of $700 billion.
Neil Kashkari?
Yeah.
Who's he?
He's a Treasury Assistant Secretary for International Affairs.
Oh, okay.
But what's more, he's also a former banker with, Goldman Sachs, the same place that Paulson came from.
Okay.
This guy was literally an aerospace engineer who later went to grad school for an MBA at Penn, you know, the Wharton School of Economics. And he's 35 years old, and he's going to get to play with $700 billion. I remember being 35. That was only 10 years ago, Juanita. I know some people think it was like hundreds of years more. But it was only 10 years ago.
I even remember being 35.
And I wouldn't trust me at 35.
No.
With, even a paltry billion dollars.
Yeah. A paltry billion, yeah.
Let alone 700.
But, I'll tell you, from day to day, you never know. But they do need, all this stuff. And I think some of those NASA and all should be up on charges for not impeaching the guy.
Well, that will be the history book's view of Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and a majority of this Congress. That will be viewed as their failure and their shame, Juanita, because they turned a blind eye. They blinked.
They got shame. Do they have shame?
No, but the nation does, and it's our shame.
But there was another, how do you pronounce his name? Bugliosi?
Bugliosi, yes.
Bugliosi. There was another thing that I recall about Bush. It just is a little something, but it stuck in my mind. Our troops were over there, girls and boys and men and women, in the desert. Remember they're having all the storms and trying to get to to Baghdad? And they were out there in the storm. It was 125. They had all that heavy equipment to carry. They had heavy stuff to wear and all. And they were having to go like almost inch by inch to get anywhere because the sand was getting into their vehicles. And they showed Bush, that's when they used to show him, at his home out in Texas at his ranch. And he was out. They were outside, and they had a bunch of people from overseas and their reporters there and all. And he said, "We need to get inside before we all fall out from the heat." And I thought, "Well, you jerk! You don't care what our kids and troops are going through." But I just always stuck in my mind that one thing him said. We better get inside before you pass out from all this heat. Well, you know, wasn't as hot over there as it was in Iraq.
Yeah, and let's try putting 75 pounds of gear on his back.
Right.
and giving him a liter of water a day. I mean, we knew people who were over there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was when we ran in there and didn't realize that, hey, look, we done got us an occupation. Dang.
When they got into Iraq, I know this from the horse, one horse's mouth, they did not have anything to drink, hardly, except a few cold drinks, you know, Cokes. And they were just, they were hiding them. The people in charge were hiding them from the troops.
Well, at one point, I mean, this is what we were told. In the height of summer, men and women over there, enlisted personnel who were actually out there doing the work, were getting 1 liter of water per day.
Oh,
1 liter. They could sweat that in an hour.
But at their greatest success, according, you know, to how the neocons view it, when they took over Baghdad, all they had was a few cold, you know, canned drinks.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
No, but don't you remember?
They ran out of ammo too.
Don't you remember when how it came out? And I don't know if it ever changed. Don't you remember when it came out that the Pentagon auditor had gone in and inspected some of the Halliburton kitchens, and they were feeding rotten meat to our troops?
Oh, yeah, and polluted water.
Yeah, and then they were charging the government $30 for a Halliburger.
And also charging for meals that weren't even
served. Yeah.
Served, right.
Exactly.
Right.
So
it's a crime. And also another thing I'll never forget is like watching. I used to watch all those hearings they had when the war first started, with Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and all. And I don't know how many times I saw them. I say at least 5 times, where they'd get on there and it was like they'd never heard of our troops not having armor. Oh, we'll have to get on to that.
Yes.
It's like, it was news to them.
Well, you know, so much water has gone over the dam, Juanita, that we forget. We forget Rummy standing there and saying, well, you go to war with the army you want, get you've got, not the one that you want.
Yeah, I know.
After that, I don't know how every member of the service over there could keep from just rushing the stage and tearing that man into little tiny pieces.
Yeah. And but all those hearings was before that even happened.
Yeah.
I heard them. I know. I quit after a while, you know. I couldn't keep up with all that stuff. It was just too much. But I knew that, and I think it's been that way. It's that way in the Gulf War. They had old equipment, what they had, and it's the same thing with this. And not enough of it either.
But it's been real good for certain people's stock portfolios.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much to that in there, Bob, I'll tell you. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
It is.
And I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right, Juanita, you have yourself a
good. And I hope he will be successful.
Well, I... Indeed. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Night-night.
Juanita in Central Florida, our View correspondent. And listen, I've had emails flowing in all day, and I'm going right to the phones. I'm not going to tear off on anything. But I just want to take a minute and welcome anyone in the audience who had previously spent their time about this hour of the day, spent their time listening to Jeff Farias. I considered Jeff to be a genuine comrade in this struggle. See, I have a different view of how all of this works than probably most people. I don't consider myself and have never considered myself to be in competition with anybody who's in the same slot, time slot as me, or for that matter, in a different slot. There aren't enough of us that we can afford to lose any of them. And so if you've come over here, as I've heard some folks have, if you've come over here since Jeff is not on the air at Nova M anymore, in a situation that I know nothing about, All I can say is welcome, and I hope you will find yourselves at home. Try out the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. It's free. Feel free to share your thoughts. This is conversation radio. We don't break for scam ads or anything like that. The horn operates strictly, and I do mean strictly, by virtue of the considered efforts of the folks who listen to this programming and share their time, the most precious commodity, their time with us in creating conversation radio, emails, telephone calls, chat room participation, blogging, what have you. Please consider yourself welcome here, and I will welcome the word when it comes, and I will let you know the minute I find out where Jeff Farias lands, because, like I said, we don't have so many liberal progressive talkers that we can afford to shed even one of them, and especially not one of the passion and dedication of Jeff Farias. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Albert, what's up, brother?
Well, you liberals blaming Bush for all these problems.
Nah, we're just, we can't help it. We're just morons.
You gotta laugh.
I know.
The mind killer.
Yeah, it is.
Remember that.
It is. Fear is the, yeah, exactly.
Fear is the mind killer, you know. We're not going to even let Bush go to Paraguay. We're not even going to allow that. This man and the rest of them, and Halliburton and Walmart and all these other ethnic parasites, these cannibals, they will all pay. They will pay. I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, monetarily, they're going to cease to exist. Because, I mean, how much more outrage can there be? Now, I mean, you look. Where's their valid anything? Where is it? Right now, the stock market's at Bush when Bush took office. Isn't that funny? Everything comes around.
Well, yeah, it's basically puked up everything. Oh, yeah, and wait, you know, wait till you read up on this little dude who's gonna run the fund. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. No, that's, I don't even want to think about what I would do with 700.
I mean, they've created him a new office and everything. Let's see. Let me find it again so we can find the name of the office. I had inadvertently closed that tab. It will be, the Office of Finance. Sit down, Albert.
Benevolent. If it's financial benevolence, I'm just going to have a heart attack.
I know. You're just going to. And we'll hear the sound of spontaneous human combustion over the radio. No, it's the Office of Financial Stability.
I love you, man. That's so funny.
Yeah, isn't that precious? God. Isn't that just precious?
Yes.
And, you know, figure this out, okay? Goes to college, and I'm not denigrating his brains because it takes brains to get what he got. Goes to college, gets a degree in aerospace engineering. So I guess we can now officially say that the bailout really is rocket science.
Bob, we're going to the stars.
Oh, we are the stuff that stars are made of.
Just let my fantasy roll for a minute, because if you really think about it, honestly, that does make sense in a sense. I know it's not going to be the way you know Goldman Sachs kind of pulls dreams out of your heart, but we do need to get into space. It's a strange thing. We need to get out there. We need to.
Oh, I want George Bush in space. I want him in a space that's about 8x8 with a stainless steel toilet, you know, nailed into the concrete. But that's me.
We should make him. We need to put him in carbonite, and then, you know, keep the
species. Oh, there you go, Boba Fett.
No, just to keep the species progressing and take him out every 1,000 years, and see how much better we are off. Without you here, back into the.
Here, wait a minute, it's caught!
No.
And just his face freezes in it. It's coal!
And, you know, this is where we've come I mean, we've come down to back to Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
Oh, yeah, and William Ayers. You know, there's one thing about that whole William Ayers thing, though. And, you know, not far be it from me to just, you know, hammer on something. But there's this little problem with the whole he's pals with a terrorist business. and that's this.
Yeah. There were
questions put as to how one, because, what's her name? She just showed up on Rachel Maddow's show as well.
Oh, the long neck, pointy necker, whatever her name is.
Yeah, she's got a giraffe neck. Nancy Pfaffenhauer. Pfaffenhauer.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that's a silent. So she's Nancy Pfaffenhauer.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and I've got the audio of it right here. She showed up on CBS with that crack journalist, Harry Smith. Okay, check this out, Albert. This is too good.
Well, you know, Harry, I just might point out that we didn't dredge this information up. The New York Times spent 2,000 words on an article about it the other day. The Wall Street Journal's written on it.
And what was the conclusion? What was the conclusion of that article?
What the article also concluded is that if Senator McCain had hung out with somebody who bombed abortion clinics, no one would consider it illegitimate.
Okay. No one would. What it also concluded. Never, so she, in other words, is dodging the real conclusion. There's only one problem, Albert. John McCain kind of has hung out with people who bomb abortion clinics. Because every time the opportunity has come up for him to vote to protect Americans from right-wing religion industry domestic terrorists who bomb abortion clinics, he's sort of, voted against it. How do you like that? He voted against making anti-choice violence a federal crime. Not just once, but twice in 1993 and 1994.
Bob, hang on, bud. For them to even bring up Ayers up.
Well, there's that, yeah.
I mean, it's like I move next. It's like, hey, I know. You know who I blame? I blame Ed Gacy and all these serial killers, all their neighbors. It's their neighbors. I hope none of them, this guy lived next to Jeffrey Dahmer. He lived in the same neighborhood. He drank out of the same water. That's the most ridiculous garbage I ever heard. And not only the fact is, how much prison time did Ayers serve? How much? None?
None, I don't think.
They didn't even bring charges against him. He must have been a real, I mean, I wasn't alive at the time, but he must have been a real terror. I mean, he must have been it's like, oh, Osama bin Laden. It's like, oh, we find him. Oh, yeah, we got no charges on you. And he goes to Harvard and gets a degree and starts being a professor. And, you know, 10 years later, someone, you know, my professor, Osama, said, you know, gave me an A+. Wow. I mean, Is that the same? He's a terrorist? A terrorist? The hypocrisies are unbelievable. They're talking terrorism as they are bombing other countries and, you know, overrunning that. They're sitting there talking about Russia while we do the same exact things, except even less with less provocation. I mean, it's madness. This is insanity. I mean, either I am completely a raving lunatic, or these people literally are raving lunatics. I mean, you were talking about Halliburton and the billions of dollars in the sinkhole. I mean, murder, like, these guys are committing crimes way beyond murder. Murder would be like me getting popped for my ticket that I got when I was 18, and I, you know, left it in Guam. I mean, murder.
You know what the extent of Barack Obama's contact with William Ayers is?
I went to the library and he was in the same aisle as me looking up Jay.
They met at a luncheon meeting about school reform in a Chicago skyscraper.
Yeah, ridiculous. What is that? Oh, they went to the same restaurant. Oh, they sat at the same table. Oh, they had a drink. Oh, they said hello. Yeah, they showed pictures of the family. They talked about this, this, and that. And they
on the other hand, however, when legislation came before the Senate in order to make it impossible for the domestic terrorists to get away with their horrors, well, there was old John McHoover. There's old 894 rolling down the tracks.
Yeah.
Voting to make sure that those who were fined for violence at abortion clinics were able to avoid penalties by declaring bankruptcy. You remember Operation Rescue, Albert?
Rescue. Oh, yeah.
NARAL, National Abortion Rights Action League, and maybe some other organizations. I don't have the stuff at my fingertips right now. They sued Operation Rescue for the hell that they put people through. And they won. They devastated the civil suit, not a criminal case, but a civil suit. They just beat Operation Rescue like a barred mule. What did Operation Rescue do? Operation Rescue promptly, and Randall Terry was their boy. They promptly declared bankruptcy, paid, and nobody was ever able to collect a penny. John McCain was part of that. So, you know, while this Nancy Pfottenhauer, if I did not know that, if I did not know this was Hassan Pfeffer, I'd swear it was a carrot. Nancy Hassan Pfeffer, says that, they hung, the snowmobile babe, say that that Obama hung around with terrorists. Well, strictly by their logic, Albert. If being in the same building with William Ayers is hanging out and being pals with a terrorist, then John McCain was actually, sighting in the gun for Eric Rudolph. By their calculus, not mine. Just to be clear.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a closer connection between Adolf Hitler and George W. Bush. Really? I mean, what are we talking? We're talking about 6 degrees of separation, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'd say.
That's what we're talking about here. So it's like, Bush is a three. He's what, three steps away from Adolf Hitler and doing business with him. So is that how, now, you and I know that, and we say, yeah, of course, just another reason to not like these and trust these bastards, right? We come and say that. But these people will sit there at the very slightest, little, tiniest, furthest, connection in the world, and they'll run with it to almost make it sound like Mr. the most liberal senator in the world, history of the world, was the guy who was planting bombs, and William Ayers was running the controls, and
believe me, yes, I'm not. That's how these dirty scum sucking the pigs operate. I'm trying here. I don't want to have to run the children out of the room because I'm going to start using the fun words this early in the program.
I'm sorry, bud.
No. I'm talking about me. I mean, because Lord God, the level of character assassination is, and for Nancy Hassenpfeffer to say, well, they'd consider it was legitimate. Well, okay, sister, then it's legitimate. Tell us why your boss opposed, what was it called? The bubble law in Colorado? The bubble law that prevented these right-wing religion industry fanatics from getting within 8 feet of people going to and from a women's health services clinic. The Supreme Court upheld that, but John McCain, the maverick, he opposed it. He wanted those right to lifers to be able to go right up and scream in those tormented women's faces. Because when you finally make the decision, I don't have a uterus or a womb or anything, but I try to do that walk a mile in my moccasins thing. I'm guessing that by the time you make the decision to go into that building, you've already had some hell of your own, and you've had some sleepless nights, and you've wondered, and you've agonized, and you've put yourself through the unmitigated torment that none of these right-wingers can ever imagine,
And John McCain wants to make sure that some religious freak who thinks that the world's 6,000 years old and Jesus rode to school on a dinosaur, he wants to let them get up and scream in her face about their belief in controlling her insides? Screw him! He's guilty by Nancy Hossenpfeffer's standards. Sorry.
No, that's his standards. Isn't it?
Yeah.
He's not calling the shots? He's not saying, yeah, right.
Sure he is.
I mean, come on. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. That's why, you know, and that's the nice thing I've seen about, you know, they talk about Obama going negative. But, you know, it's kind of tough to go negative with the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I really haven't seen, maybe it's just me, I'm so biased, and you know, I see in such green glasses, you know, but I really haven't seen anything like John McCain. I mean, I'll say things that are more outrageous than what Obama's saying. Like, you know, I haven't heard nothing about napalming children and laughing with it in the cockpit. These are the kinds of, like, ads that if it was role reverse and Obama was McCain, that's the kind of ads he'd be running against them because, let's face it, Obama is a pretty, man, I ain't going to try to call him perfect or nothing because he's not, but damn, he's a real human being. You know, I got the honor to sit there and look at him and watch his mannerisms. He's a human being. He's a comfortable human. He's comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I've been within a couple of feet of the guy, and he seems just like a regular nice guy.
Yeah. You know, but McCain, I mean, man, he makes me turn the heat on just watching him on the internet. You know, I'd see a clip of him, and he's just, you know, that's because they know they're done. And they are done. That's why, man, we're gonna see Larry Sinclair before long. You know it.
They saved the best for last, or the worst for last, yeah. Depending on how you view things. They think it's the best. Yeah. We think it's disgusting.
I mean, talk about substance. But Larry Sinclair is going to be, I guarantee, that's how low they're going to go. You're going to see ads nationwide. Obama was smoking crack cocaine and having gay sex with a man in the back of his limousine.
Oh, I want you to be, I really, Albert, I mean, yeah, I love you, brother. I really want you to be wrong about that because my head's just going to go, and it'll, you know.
I know, but that's how much they want it. In a sense, I hope they don't. I hope I'm wrong too, and I hope they don't fight that hard. All right, because look at this mess that we got. Look at this mess. This place is unbelievable.
Well, that's okay. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse or anything, but look at this character who's going to head the Treasury Office of Financial Good Feelings or whatever the hell we decided it's called.
Yeah.
Now. They're not even going to bring his name up to the Senate.
No. Hell no.
No. See, he's not even going to be brought before the Senate for confirmation because it's a confirmation-required post. He's just going to sit there and hold this job until until January the 20th, 2009, by which time, bear in mind, by which time all the $700 billion will be gone.
Yeah,
I continue to be astonished by the degree to which the American people are watching a damn mugging taking place and not even remotely interested in it.
This has to be made into a movie. Like, this very thread, this thought line that we're on right now, this has to be made into a movie. You know, hell, if Wag the Dog was made in the last, you know, we need to make this movie. This movie has to get made.
Oh, yeah, and when you get to the actual crime part of the movie, I got the soundtrack for you. Are you familiar with, again, you know, Star Trek, Bugs Bunny, and Idiocracy? That's my film, that's my entire filmography. But when we get to the actual doing of the crime part, we go to that wonderful piece of Bugs Bunny orchestral music, the what I call the industrial theme, that dun 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 dun
dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun
this.
And yet, my daughter and I attended the opening of the local county Campaign for Change headquarters this past weekend.
Excellent.
Nobody was talking about this.
I had the same experience. I went into the one over here.
Get a cookie, cup of coffee, and talk about how bad George W. Bush is. Well, damn it, he is. But we just, oh, my God, the congressman who lives in my district was just complicit in the heist.
Same thing. And I booed him.
Oh, I saw that guy. I thought of you because it said La Crosse, blah, 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 somewhere else. And I went, oh, that's Albert's guy.
Yep.
I'm voting for this because, not because I like the bill. I hate this bill. I despise this bill. I'm going to take this bill out behind the building and pee all over it when I'm done, but I'm voting for it because I love America. Oh, my aching back.
Yeah, he makes me a little ill, and, you know, I mean, but here's the thing, I mean, you know, we got to have a little bit of faith. And that Barack is a human being. And that Barack does come from our roots. You know, I saw an interesting article talking about how the man's, like, most of his, like, a lot of his ancestors are all, like, in this little part of southern Ohio. And not for nothing, that might play there, Ohio. So we're going to be looking at, you know, a president Barack Hussein Obama, which is a good thing. Because he is a human being, hopefully. And you never know, I never want to put all the eggs, but I'll take one out. I think he's 99% sure he's a human being. 99% sure that he's going to hold these bastards accountable. And you know what? If we went into Afghanistan to go get the ghost, the U.S. intelligence operative, Osama, if we went and did
that. The 6'7" guy in the white robes with the portable dialysis machine, him.
Yeah, him. And he's still around, and he's got his own studio and his dancers and all that. All right, if we did all that to Afghanistan, I hope he invades. I hate to say this. I don't hate to say this. Because I'm sure they would actually cooperate with us. The people would, anyway. We have to go into Paraguay and get him. The people, we have nothing else to go to except just for him and invade Paraguay. We'd know where he'd be. The people there in those little mud huts and all those, what do they call them? Paellas? What do they call those ghettos they got there? That movie City of the Sun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I actually saw that film.
That's a great film. And then the documentary that goes with it. You should really
now that I didn't see.
Oh yeah, go get it again. Go into special features, and there's a documentary about that. And it's and some of the truth that the local politicians are talking about it's just an amazingly beautiful thing.
Point.
Oh, and speaking of John McCain and documentaries. No, I just got to get this out to you. You guys go on the internet right now, everybody. Write this down. Go on the internet. Save this up. Go to NABBAlister. Go to documentaries. And look up the documentary, Why We Fight.
Oh, heck yeah.
Because John McCain has a role in that movie that is astounding. He's talking, oh, yeah, oh, Dick Cheney, blah, blah, blah. I'd hold him accountable, blah, 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 blah. What's that? Mr. Seymour McCain, the vice president's on the phone. Oh, the vice president's on the phone? Okay, guys, I got to go. And that would be a great commercial. But anyway, yeah, back to this, you know, the people there that, man, nah, they'd hand it. We wouldn't even have to bomb 2,000 of our own troops. The people would bring them up. You know, it wouldn't be like Noriega.
Well, you know, they may do that for themselves. They may do that for themselves.
I hope so. I sure as hope so. You know, I also saw another kind of disturbing movie. Ooh, it was kind of disturbing. It was about the Queen, right? Queen Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of struck me. I mean, you know, she sits there and hangs out on her, you know, 50,000-acre ranch, and Bush is going to have his 50,000-acre place. See, that's what he wants to be. That's what I think they think they are. They think they're the monarchs. Like
I have argued before. I have argued that for years now, Albert, yeah. That the Bush family aims at being real live, honest to God royalty. They want really? That. They ache for it. That pearl clutching old terrorist freak mother of his wants to be the queen mommy so bad she can taste it.
What the hell for? Why would you want to be one of
because,
those people?
But you got to understand, you got to understand the dynamic of the Bush family, Albert. Okay, the Bush family aren't, you know, they only got rich when they started feasting off the human blood of our soldiers, the doughboys in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd been shopkeepers and stuff in St. Louis and, you know, Columbus. And in fact, you got to remember, Prescott Bush's parents left Columbus for Connecticut after he was exposed as a liar for a letter he wrote home from France during the First World War, in which he claimed to have saved the lives of Black Jack Pershing and Marshal Foch at the same time. It was published. I mean, this isn't speculation, okay? This isn't Kitty Kelly stuff. It was published in the local Beaming Mrs. Bush, you know, three generations of pearl clutchers back.
Uh-huh.
Beaming Mrs. Bush ran off to the, you know, the Columbus Daily Examiner and Moral Volcano and said, look what my little Prescott has done. And they published it in the newspaper as a straight-up news story. When, in fact, little Prescott, it was a big, you know, he was jagging him. It was all made up. And then they were so humiliated, they had to pull up stakes out of Ohio and move to Connecticut and become nutmeggers. No, really. Not a joke. You know, this is the same guy. This is the same guy who was temporarily stationed before he acted. You know, I got to give it to Prescott Bush. He at least went overseas, all right? You know, he didn't dodge it like W. But at the same time, at one point, Prescott was stationed at Fort Sill in Oklahoma, and some of his Yaley buddies snuck out by night and went into a cemetery and dug up a Native American skull that may or may not have been Geronimo's that sits yep. in the crypt of the Skull and Bones to this day. And there is an ongoing demand by that Native group to repatriate the bones of Geronimo.
Huh.
Okay? Now, bear in mind, those are the, and so it was the family, the other side of the family, I think it was the Walkers, one of them got appointed to procurement. One of the families was involved in building boxcars or some such and had a cozy relationship with Rockefeller's Standard Oil Trust. That's where all that comes from. But before that, they were all just, you know, puritanical theologians and that kind of thing.
Well,
but beginning with World War I, they start getting some money. But they remain to this day very, very cognizant of their status as nouveau riche. All right? Mm-hmm. And as such, they crave what they cannot ever have. They crave Kennedy status. Okay? They crave the respect with which this nation accords this nation accords to the Kennedy family. They want to be honest to God American royalty because they have not risen above their in their heart of hearts, they have not risen above their plebeian status. And it goes double for the for Barbara Bush, nay Pierce.
You're talking about that's the Baron. She's the Baroness Harkonnen. Now, not for nothing, I wouldn't give the Kennedy. I mean, Kennedys are more because of they're not royalty based on the money. Or,
no, they're royalty based upon their determination to engage in public service, and a lot of that.
I mean, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I mean, there's some real live, honest-to-God nastiness there. At the same time that the Bush family was doing business with Hitler through Fritz Thyssen, whose name I got. Lilo's in the chat room. Maybe she can help me with the pronunciation. T-H-Y-S-S-E-N. I need the good German pronunciation. But anyway, at the same time that the Bush family was playing footsie with him through Brown Brothers Harriman, well, you know, I mean, we all know that Papa Joe Kennedy was an appeaser, that he was he was appointed ambassador to the Court of St. James in London, and that he was in favor of reaching some sort of rapprochement with Adolf Hitler, to the point that he had to be recalled. So it's not like there's no skeletons along the way, but the Kennedys rose above that.
And just being liberal, and just being that we are liberal, meaning freedom and open and honest, we are going to be open and honest, and we'll admit. See, like, you wouldn't hear Rush or Hannity or O'Reilly or any of them and their callers ever actually uncovering the skeletons. Yeah, but we dig up our skeletons, say, yep, here.
Yeah, I don't have time to. I don't have time to sugarcoat stuff, and neither do you. But with John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy,
that's right.
The dedication toward making America better, and the transformation, frankly, that took place in those two people when they saw life in America far, far outside the boundaries of Hyannisport. Bobby Kennedy seeing the civil rights movement in the Deep South. John Kennedy coming and seeing the abject poverty that Appalachia was subjected to in order to power this nation. Those were transformative moments for those two men that they injected then into the rest of their family. And it transformed, as far as I can tell, as far as I can see, it transformed the entire raison d'etre of the family into one of public service and dedication to the American good. That road to Damascus moment has never happened with the Bush family, because they've always been engaged in covering for each other's failures and shortcomings and mistakes. George W. Bush, as you well know, Albert, George W. Bush has had his ass covered from the very beginning. You know, when they didn't tell him about his baby sister, whom he loved. As a 5 or 6 year old, his baby sister Robin, she died. They didn't tell him.
No.
And instead went to play golf the day that they dirted her. And from then on, it was cover up for George. You know, the poor. If it hadn't been for the fact, if it wasn't for the fact that he was such a godforsaken little monster, such a conscienceless freak,
mm-hmm.
You could weep for him. Can you imagine your sister goes away and you're a little boy and your baby sister that you look up, it just disappears and they don't say anything about her anymore? Holy crap, what would that do to your psyche? And then you got that mother of his potty training him at gunpoint. You know, it's no wonder that he is the way he is. Cramming M80s up the butts of frogs and blowing them up as a child. You know, Mr. Dahmer, blood red courtesy phone, Mr. Dahmer.
Shooting his brothers and sisters with BB guns.
Sure.
Only one pump.
Yeah. Guess what? One pump hurts.
One pump hurts. And, you know, that's why in terms of when we get Barack in here, and when we get him, I'll tell you one thing he didn't say when he was in La Crosse here this past week. He didn't say anything about clean coal. And that's one thing I also have to applaud him on. I'm just saying that to you to kind of, you know, I think he just gives that lip service because he doesn't need any PACs, you know, getting coal money even more than they probably already are. You know, if he doesn't at least give them some sort of vocal appeasement. But at the very least, appeasement is way, I mean, in that respect, is far better than enabling. And, you know, that's one thing that I hope. One of the first things Barack does is rescind some of these powers seized by this, you know, giggling sociopathic freak. You know, start rescinding some of those powers. I mean, you know, as was demonstrated by, you know, Joe Biden. At least, you know for a fact Barack Obama knows the Constitution. You know, just as much as, you know, Joe Biden knows the Constitution, and they respect those documents as, you know, you and I and every working person in this country does. You know, so you know that they got that, and they got that in their pocket. You know, and you're just going to have to hope, and, you know, we're just going to have to be motivated and, energized in order to get this man in the office, to not allow any thieving, not allow any stealing. You know, there's going to be time.
Newsflash to the Obama campaign. I won't speak for any of the other liberal talkers, but I would guess that at least a majority of them will adopt the same stance. I don't turn a blind eye to stuff.
Nope.
You know, just because you call yourself a D doesn't mean that you get away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still be sitting here saying what's wrong is wrong and what's right is right. And that is, and you know, that really, Albert, is the final, that's the final metric on the honesty of liberal versus right-wing talk.
That's right.
Now, you remember last week when Mark Levin, that guy with the voice made for print, decided to go after Falafel Boy, who had in turn gone after the oxymoron, and they were all slinging mud at each other, saying, "No, I'm the true conservative. Now I am." All of that garbage. Well, with that in mind, remember, they're all water carriers no matter what happens. You know, they're all behind John McCain now because, well, you know, John McCain is a true Republican. There's not an ounce of honesty among any of them. But that will never, I can vow that will never happen on this radio network. I'm pretty darn sure of it. I speak for myself only, but I would be willing to guess that the other hosts on this network would sign on to that idea.
Indeed. Indeed. I mean, this is definitely, I don't know, man, you know, extinction. If we lose this, it's like extinction. That's my thing. This is almost like the game. This is for all the marbles, this election. And, you know, I hope to say, like, when we win these marbles, all of it, I hope the archives are opened up. I want to see some truth. I want to see some integrity. I want to see some transparency in this country.
Oh, I want to see. One of my dreams, Albert, is that on the first day in office, you know, in between tux changings for the inaugural balls, that there will be a stack of papers waiting for his signature. Yeah, there went that Bush regulation. There went that one. Yeah, it's just signing your name. I mean, you get good at it after a while. I'd imagine he can do it pretty quick by now. But just rescinding. You know, the business with the archives being, oh, we're protecting the archives of George H.W. Bush for national security reasons. Horse feathers, Barack Obama. Yeah, and signing statements and all the stuff that's just been so slippery and nasty and slimy. I don't want to see no signing statements. If you don't like the bill as it exists, I don't care if you got a Democratic Congress, veto the damn thing and ask them to do it the way you want it.
Yeah, you imagine that? I'd like to see him do that. Man, that would be awesome, seeing a Democratic president with a huge majority, because it's Republican smashing time this year. But, you know, with a huge majority, they're going to sit there, and, you know, I'd love to see him veto something that, you know, the mealy washers actually put out. But I'll tell you what, him opening the archives, especially, like, opening up, like, man, if he, I don't know if he can do it. You have to get Bugalosi back on the line, but... You know, it'd be nice to see him. That would actually, I think, save his life from our worst fears of. And this is, I think, the only reason besides the speeches, I think one of the reasons they also compare, you know, Barack to Kennedy is, you know, for the whole assassination thing. And I think if he was to actually open up those archives, that might save his life. Because if there's something in those archives that's worth hiding for 80 years, right?
Yeah.
Well, that would be worth its weight in gold. And we don't need Barack to go the way of Kennedy. We need Kennedy, and we need the sense. You know, I'm not saying that he was.
We needed all 8 years. We needed all 8 years of John Kennedy.
That's exactly right. Because you know, as you saw with the Kennedys, they're closer to us in that respect. I mean, his dad was a gangster, you know, running alcohol. You know, so in a sense, they came from a neighborhood. You know, they came from people. They came as immigrants.
Well, that's the other thing. I'm glad you brought that up, Albert, because. That's the other thing that the Kennedys did know, because the guy who was the father or the father of the father of Joe, you know, the patriarch,
yep.
They knew what it was to see signs in windows in Boston that said Irish need not apply.
That's right.
You know, we all think, oh, Boston, home of the Irish, you know, St. Patrick's Day, blah, 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 blah. No. The bigotry then, and it came from the blue blood classes, you know, the descendants of the old Puritans. It was very real, and it was very, very poisonous and hateful and vitriolic. They lived through that. There's nobody in the Bush clan that has ever seen no Irish need apply. Hell no. No, 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 no. That, you know, they were going to, you know, God, into the early 19th century, or at least the mid-19th century, that's when they started going to Yale and becoming, you know, blue blood, the rectors of this or that parish.
Yep. They didn't have, you know, they didn't steal their mommy's spoons.
Yeah, exactly.
They had passage paid for and, you know, had servants and, you know, all the way here. So yeah,
I mentioned Kitty Kelly a little bit ago, but that book is very, very instructive on facts that were never contested by the Bush family. And by the way, all that stuff that they came out with, it's not true. They never sued her. They never sued her. And that speaks boatloads.
Exactly. I think that's one reason. That's exactly one reason that you can trust only a little bit more, but you can trust, you know, BBC English type journalism a little more, because those guys can very easily get sued and
right. That's
money.
The Bushes could cross the Atlantic and sue Greg Palast in a heartbeat for anything that he's done on the BBC, with one problem: it just happens to be true.
Amen, brother. All right, brother. I'm going to let you go.
All right. Take care, Albert. Good hearing from you, brother.
Always, man. You take care.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our buddy Albert in rural Wisconsin. Let's see. A quick email in from the Horns critic at large, Reverbo, he who brought us the concept of make it personal. Yeah, make it personal. All this. Make it personal. It is personal. Do you realize there are people in the United States, and I'm going right back to the phone, I promise. There are people in these United States who take Clay Aiken's announcement that he's gay more personally than they take a $700 billion heist of their grandchildren's future. No, really. I'm not kidding. That ought to be enough to put you in the corner weeping for a day. On the same day that Wall Street was going to steal $700 billion from a grandchild that you haven't even thought of yet, or a great-grandchild, there were people who were saying, and neither here nor there, I can't believe he's gay. I just can't believe it. That is such a revelation in that there, People magazine. I can't believe it. No, really. But Reverbo, take it personally. Make it personal. Reverbo writes in and says, the day people like the Bushes understand the concept of noblesse oblige, they might begin to be in the same universe as the Kennedys and people like Paul Newman. It is the social and ethical imperative for the nobility to act generously and honorably. It's the idea of true public service and philanthropy. Don't hold your breath. Thanks, Reverbo. I appreciate it. So, let's see what's happening here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I was sitting there listening to y'all, and it just all of a sudden hit me. And I'm sorry it happened now. I should have got this idea a week ago. We should have got David to go over in Nashville and get a couple tickets to this thing. And we should have called H. Ross Perot and said, hey, how'd you like to sit on the front row at the next debate? Just sitting there.
Oh, God. Oh, that'd be precious.
Because I tell you what, if anybody ever sticks a microphone in H. Ross Perot's mouth, in front of his face, John McCain's pretty much dirt.
Yeah, then it's all over.
Because he will read his pedigree on the air. Because you and I both know that he let's put it this way, dirt would be a step up to what he thinks of John McCain.
Equating John McCain with dirt is a slur on dirt.
I know. But, it's like I sent you the thing. I sit here listening to this thing, watching all this unfold today. You know, we're going to go after Obama on character. It's like, okay, which do we get to talk about McCain? McCain the adulterer? McCain the thief? McCain the liar? Which one do we get to talk about?
How about McCain the genocidalist? Nah, he's a hero. He was POW.
I tell you who else we should have got a ticket for. Mr. Letterman, please come sit down.
Yeah. Oh.
That's been so much fun to watch. It's like McCain got caught not only lying, a stupid lie. I mean, you know, it's like saying,
yeah,
you call
venal,
say, oh,
venal
I've got
stuff.
Rush back to Washington.
Yeah, venal stuff. Right. It took 22 hours. He must have, you know, he must have walked.
Well, you know how it is when the traffic there on the Roosevelt Parkway is bad. It's really bad. You know, it's like when you're sitting there doing the show with Keith Olbermann and they go to a live shot. And apparently, the boys over at CBS News weren't happy about it, but they went to a live shot showing him sitting there with Katie doing the interview. But apparently, some of the people in CBS News were like, "How dare you all use our feed?" It's like, well, I'm sorry, it's out there. He's part of CBS, too. I think he's allowed to access it.
Not anymore, I'll bet you.
Yeah, I'd say probably not. But, and, you know, it's like you say.
Darn thing doesn't work anymore.
Well, since he doesn't use the Google, we know he couldn't use the Google map. Maybe that was it, since he couldn't find his way to Washington. Like you say, it took 22 hours. Had to go through a few speeches to get there. It's like, was he having to work to get money to go? Here, I'll go do a speech and somebody.
Yeah, he had a little violin case open down below Katie Couric. You just couldn't see it in the shot.
But and like I say, and talk about lie. Okay, please explain to us, Mr. McCain, what does it mean to suspend your campaign? I'm curious. What does it mean?
Yeah, is it still suspended?
Because like I say, you still have people going out talking on the talking head shows. Yeah, apparently they. One or two.
Oh, Nancy Hassenpfeffer's all over the place. She's been on Rachel Maddow and Laura Ingraham, and oh yeah.
Well, apparently one of the news groups, I don't know, I can't remember which one it was, started calling around the country, and they couldn't find one of the McCain offices in state that was closed. They were all open, taking in money, handing out leaflets and whatever. So I'm just curious what suspended means to him. We really need to know this definition. You know, so what does suspended mean to you, Mr. McCain? Because when you say you're going to do it somewhere else if you were president and you said you're going to suspend something, I really want to know what that means. You know, we still can't get the word victory explained by W, so can you please explain the word suspended?
No, he's a maverick, don't you know? By the way, maverick. Maverick.
Hey,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask. You know, we heard it so much, and it was, you know, he came with like a built-in meme or something. Anybody ever stop to think what a maverick is?
One that goes against the flow?
No, it's the wild horse that runs all over the plains with no sense of direction whatsoever.
Okay.
So maybe he is.
My favorite one that I thought of, and I think I sent it to you, was, okay, now if we get to talk about acquaintances. Oh, goody. Let's start off with Mr. G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah, there's a buddy.
Now, he's one of John McCain's friends. Now, this is the same man who's admitted that if Richard Nixon had told him he'd have killed anybody, you know, he'd have made an appointment with, was it Ellsberg, said he would have killed him without even thinking about it. You know, I'm sure he would have killed Woodward and Bernstein without, you know, probably wouldn't even use the gun, probably just use his fingers.
Well, hey, here's a question for you, Luke. This is just an afterthought from Albert. Hey, Bob, if he suspends his campaign like that so easy, how hard would it be for him to suspend the Constitution or the Bill of Rights? And? Fair question.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's like, say, it's like that whole victory thing. I still want a Republican to explain to me what the word victory means. You know, because they keep on claiming they're going for victory. Fine, what is victory? I want to know. So when we see it, we'll recognize it. You know, I don't want to miss it, you know, as we pass it by.
Oh, you know? There it went.
Yeah.
Damn. Missed our chance.
But, you know, it's some of this stuff, you know, with that. And, oh, you saw the thing with now that apparently some of her staff are going to actually talk to the legislative investigation, unlike Hubby, who was going to talk to the quote-unquote independent personnel board that she appoints.
Yeah, right.
But apparently, like I say, I'm beginning to wonder if the word jail time really does make people want to talk a whole lot. But I'm wondering if you have those things.
Oh, yeah, speaking. Did you see the comments that came out from old Ted Stevens?
Oh God, poor old Teddy. They're all against him. But yeah, I mean, just give him some steel shots so he can rub them around his hand.
Yeah, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled them. I caught him with the strawberries.
First.
No, yeah.
Which one's the Teddy doing now?
Yeah, you just gotta love the idea of Ted Stevens on tape, sitting there saying, "Well, you know what it was it? They'll come after us, but they won't shoot us. It's not like we're in Iraq." Wasn't that what he said?
Oh, I hadn't heard that one. That sounds really good. Because apparently there's already been two, three people who've already testified that I think if the trial stopped right now and the prosecution said, "We're done," then Ted would be going away for a while. Because apparently there's been two, three people that said, "Oh, yeah, he knew what was going on. It wasn't something he can't claim ignorance of it." You know, Ted knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah, this is on tape, okay? The folks over at thinkprogress.org had this.
Oh.
It's a conversation with former VCO chief Bill Allen, you know, the guy who's already...
Already burned him.
Yeah, he's already gone to the can for a bribery conviction. So this is 2 years ago. This is 2006, and he's on tape, and he tell and Steve and the old bridge to nowhere. I'm gonna remember when he quit the Senate that one night. What was that over?
Yeah, how dare they talk? Ask me questions.
Yeah. He's on tape with Bill Allen. He says, "I can't think of a thing. I can't think of anything. We've done that wrong. The worst part that could happen, we'll have to pay thousands of dollars in legal bills to get ourselves out of hot water. They're not going to shoot us. It's not Iraq. I hope to Christ it never gets to that, but I don't think it will."
I'm just amazed that we have not heard somebody talk in the news department. I'm just curious, what happens if Ted's convicted before the election? Is Ted instantly out of the election?
I don't know what the answer to that is, Lou.
That's what I mean. I'm just curious because all of a sudden he's a convicted felon. He can't be running for office, I don't think. Now, who knows? Alaska could have some weird ideas on that, but I think that's kind of federal law that I don't think you can as a convicted felon. Now, if you're convicted while in office, during that term, that's
fine. But do you remember James Traficant? He got convicted while in office, and they...
He resigned.
Yeah, and well, he made him throw him out or some such. Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, they had the meeting. Essentially, I guess, what is it? They wasn't a censure, but I guess essentially they did an expulsion. It's like, "You're no longer welcome here. Goodbye. Turn in your key to the executive washroom, please."
Yeah,
so nice to say goodbye to Ted. Bye, Ted.
And, you know, take Sarah Zilla with you.
It's like, we'll find out what your visiting days are, because she's going to have time. She can come up and see you. Depends where they end up putting him.
But, of course, this is very interesting. You know, the Kathleen Parker article from, what, a week and a half ago, where she said, I finally got to say it, you know, for the good of the party, step down Sarah Palin. Well, now Peggy Nooner's jumping on that express.
Oh, God.
Let's see. Talking about McHoover and Palin. I think they both... Peggy Nooner, remember? You know, this is... she said George W. was Churchillian. I mean, you know, she's a hardcore, all right? Because, I mean, it's hard to say that and not just... you know, keep a straight face. She said to Laura Ingraham, you know, who herself is one of the little right-wing attack blondes, I think they both ought to get more serious. Our country is facing huge challenges. Suck it up and be serious. And don't be doing this cute colloquial stuff. It doesn't sit right with me, and it doesn't seem fitting. She's a spirited person. I get all that. But I would like her to be more serious. You know, the enduring image of her legacy, Palin's legacy in this campaign, may be a photograph, a screen capture of Tina Fey standing behind a podium with a flute in her hands.
Well, I think, and the thing of it is, it was just so, not ironic, I don't think that's the right word, just flabbergasting, I guess. But the fact that when Tina Fey did her little thing, she didn't change a word. You know, when they did that little thing, you know, the first one she did.
Yeah.
But the thing, she didn't change a word. You know what I mean? She actually used Sarah Palin's word. She just changed the cadence, I guess, a little bit. And it's like, God.
I know.
Here a few of them really good. So So,
but you saw the Saturday Night Live clip, right?
Yeah.
Did you happen to know? Did you happen to notice those few little notes? Did you play Did you play Name That Tune with what she what Tina Fey hooted out of that flute?
No, I didn't. What was it?
It was dun 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 dun. Dun. It was Do the Hustle.
Oh God.
It was The Hustle. I ascribe tremendous genius to that woman. Or maybe that's all she can remember from high school band. I don't, you know. I mean, I can play the first few notes of the Roundabout by Yes, and that's the extent of my guitar genius.
And just remember one thing to everybody listening to us now. As important as it is, as we're talking here about McCain and Obama and all this good stuff, make sure y'all get out there and vote on those House and Senate elections, because those are just as important.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, pick the right person and go for it, because like I say, with the new turnout that apparently on some of these states, I have a feeling we're going to have a few people disappear out of the Senate that aren't expecting to disappear.
Mary Landrieu's in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, she's one of that gang of 14, remember? One of the folks that handed us Sammy Alito?
Adino.
Yeah, in name only, truly.
Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that some of these people that, like I say, in our party, too, and like you say, with her, it's like, look, if you want to be an independent, fine, be an independent. Go over there and talk to Bernie Sanders. I like Bernie. You know, but don't sit here and cry you're a Democrat and then try to do everything you can to prove you're not a Democrat.
You could probably create a tape loop of that and weld the headphones into Jay Rockefeller's ears, and I would still worry.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I understand. I know you're having trouble where you are.
Oh, I got no choice. I got no choice, Luke. I can't.
You have to vote for him. But
no, I ain't going to vote for him. I'm going to leave that sucker blank. I don't have to vote for the Repiglicking, but that's as far as I can go with Jay.
I'm just curious about your states. Is there somebody coming up? You know, because you got to think they're grooming somebody for whenever Robert.
It ain't so much who's being groomed as who thinks he's got it, and that is our current friend of coal governor, Joe Manchin.
Oh.
He's running for re-election, and he'll get lots of Republican and Democratic votes, and he's marking time until Robert Byrd
kicks off the khaki,
breathes out, and doesn't breathe in again.
Yeah. And amazingly enough, he'll appoint himself Senate.
There's an open debate about that, very much so. And of course, no one would love to be in that Senate more than former West Virginia Governor Gaston Caperton.
Well, now I'm curious. Now, is your lieutenant governor? Is he?
We don't have one of those.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering, will the governor step down, then turn around and whoever replaces him instantly appoint him senator?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I got to do some studying into that. I don't know exactly how it would work, because I'm trying to think if power devolves immediately to the president of the West Virginia Senate or to the Secretary of State.
Okay, that's what I mean. You know, it depends how the law is written. You know, it's like say that last day. You know, that W's in office. Watch him step down, appoint Cheney as his successor, and have Cheney pardon him.
But Cheney needs a pardon too.
Well, I mean, but he'll write that first.
Ah, well, okay, that's there you go.
That's, you know, the week before.
Yeah, to be.
And then, like, on that last day, he steps down and says, you're president for 2 hours. Right? Yeah. Has him right out
of. Yeah, open this at 10:31 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, January 20th.
Uh-huh. It's like, say, the thing I sent you from the Alaska newspaper where the guy is suing Palin and company to make sure they hang on to their emails.
Yes.
And I'm curious. Has somebody in the DNC thought of this? You know, gang, have we gone to civil court, you know, and got hold of this server company and said, you know, you all better be holding on to all the tapes. Whatever you got, you better not be thinking about it.
Yeah, just drop an injunction in their lap.
That's what I mean. I mean, at least till January, then we can send the FBI boys in there and go, let's take this computer apart. Let's see what we can find. You know, there's got to be a record in here somewhere.
Well, I bet you between John Fox and Lottie and Peter Godbold, they could turn up all kinds of fun stuff, even on a hard drive that the Ceradactyl thought she'd wiped.
Because unless you've absolutely just formatted and just about taken the torch to it, there's always some sort of backups. You know what I mean? It makes backups even it doesn't realize it makes at the time. You know, when you send something, there's a record of you sending it. And sometimes in that record of it sending is the message.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I tell you what, bud, I see it's almost the bottom of the hour, and I'm sorry I've kept you on this.
Oh, no, don't. Never apologize, Luke. You bring a ton of good stuff to the table. And I don't know if we can.
Is David going tomorrow night?
I doubt it, but he might be
around the outside blowing the horn.
but that's a great idea. Get Ross Perot a front row center seat.
Oh, maybe bring the first Mrs. McCain with him.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Take care, Luke.
You too, bud.
Bye now. And let's keep this rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Gonzo, greetings. What's going on?
Hey, Spike, what's happening?
Not much. Just enjoying the cold weather and Philly's advance into the next round of playoffs. I'm having a good time living in this miserable world.
Yeah, well, but you've got those to look forward to.
At least I'm numb to reality for a little while.
Yeah, because, it'll be World Series and then it'll be election.
Yeah, well, should be an interesting election. And I don't know if you caught that email I shot to you today.
Yeah, I did.
About something I put up on my blog. It's something that, if it's going on, I'm sure this is not the isolated case in Pennsylvania. It's certainly, there's more than just an old trout under the seat for this story. There's something that definitely smells fishy. And it's right here in my own township. They're moving the most minority and democratically heavy poll at the last minute to a new location. And it's in a gated community that was in large part created also, I should add. It was created by realtors who were segregating the area and sticking a lot of the minorities in this particular area when they built the area up. And it's a haven for slum rentals and the whole sorts. Toby Hanna has a bit of a reputation because of that. Needless to say, a lot of people that move from New York City to there don't drive, and now they're moving the poll in place to, you know, a little bit more of a difficult place if you don't drive to get to. So a little eerie reminder of the past two presidential elections. So if you go to spikerogan.blogspot.com, you'll see that. You'll see the link to the local paper, which kind of just in passing almost even mentioned the story and haven't really given it as good coverage as they should. The editorial staff came out mocking the NAACP for filing a lawsuit over it. So, you know, Pennsylvania becomes a close one, and there's some voting shenanigans. Here are the early signs of it potentially being there. So I certainly hope a lot of people nationally start picking up and hearing about these things and putting a bigger spotlight and scrutiny on the whole thing. So, and, of course, lots of registered Republicans involved in the story here. Surprise, surprise. And a few Democrats.
No.
So that's probably the worst part, is some local Democrats being also involved. So just kind of goes to show that some Democrats will do anything for a vote, including pandering to the far right.
Oh, God. Well, what is it there where you are? How's it looking for Barack?
Well, in other parts, around here, it's hard to tell in Pennsylvania, especially that community in particular. It's a gated community, so I can't even get in it. But like when I was briefly doing canvassing down in Bethlehem, seeing way more yard signs at least for Obama than McCain. Just an overwhelming majority of people would go to their doors, even ones without political signs, saying they're tired of Republicans. And a lot of them are tired of everybody, but especially they don't trust McCain, since basically he is seen as the establishment. So I think overall it shouldn't be too tough for him in Pennsylvania. I mean, you get your more rural backwoods parts where McCain signs pop up more frequently. But once you get to the more populated, educated parts of Pennsylvania, it's quite the opposite. And luckily, at least, there's a couple of farmers in Pennsylvania who have been very vocally supportive of Obama since McCain and the Farm Bill. You know, I would hope more rural Americans would realize this, that he supported Bush on the screw job on America, would veto in that Farm Bill, which not only made it slightly, not much, easier to receive food stamps. That also meant more money to farmers, because a lot of these farmers, at least in Pennsylvania, they sell their own produce throughout the season, which and a lot of them accept food stamps because of that. So, you know, by vetoing it, not only were they vetoing the provisions on the agriculture side, they were vetoing just more money in the farmers' pockets, you know, in the way of business transactions. So it's nice to see some of them are coming around, too, and really just sick and tired of what's happened because they've really gotten the screw job over the past, for decades in this country, but especially in the past nearly 10 years, they've really had a tough time on farms, you know, because no one's probably taking it harder on the chin than a family farmer with the price of everything going up. You know, they're not part of multinational corporations who can absorb it easier, like Dow or someone like that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's strange. Our news ninja Susan pointed out to me earlier today that even places like West Virginia and Georgia that were supposed to be rock solid, you know, McCain territory, we're not bright red on those election maps anymore. We're pink.
Yeah. I think a lot of unlikely places are going to start turning just for the simple fact that it's getting that bad that even if they don't like either one, basically guilt by association is really going to do a number on McCain. And that's not even guilt by Caribou Barbie Association. That's guilt by the same party as the current president association. That's been going on for a while in Pennsylvania. Great example of that was some time ago in Easton when they had an election for city council and mayor. The Republican got creamed. It's normally a Democratic town, but in the same, too, there was actually a guy who was a strong candidate for city council who was a Republican who just barely lost just by the simple fact that so many people just voted straight party line that it was impossible to get elected, not being a Democrat. So that's become a very popular trend. Hope they do something with it. Wouldn't hold my breath necessarily. I did see one poll, by the way, I got to mention that's interesting. It was a national one, NBC and the Wall Street Journal with Nancy Pelosi. But it makes me wonder what the local polls out there look like because of, you know, I know there was some people in that area who were very displeased with her a while ago. I'm wondering just what Cindy Sheehan might be polling against Nancy Pelosi out there in that congressional district. That's
very interesting because there hasn't been, and, you know, I try to pay attention, but I haven't heard a lot of noise.
And that's an independent. That's a household name in this country. That's someone who could actually, especially out there, actually win a seat. And nobody really wants to mention, you almost think the national media doesn't want to really push Cindy Sheehan over the top. They're trying to almost, well, it's better for them almost to keep Nancy Pelosi in place, you know. It would really, what's she doing? I'm really starting to have this strange suspicion that Pelosi might really have a work cut out for her in this election. And what's going on lately probably hasn't earned her brownie points in her congressional district. So, you know, a lot of people in the media like to always say independents are not electable. That's why we don't cover them. He's a libertarian, but still he wasn't part of the two parties. You know, Jesse Ventura is one of the greatest examples.
Sure.
A guy who was just written off, and he was benefited by Election Day registration in Minnesota, but in the same, you know, he proved that, you know, independents can be above a local city council or borough, you know, office. You know, they can seriously hold a higher office, because everyone likes to write off Bernie Sanders as, oh, you know, those people in Vermont, they're weirdos. They're near Canada, you know.
yeah, apparently it's catching or something.
Yeah. Although it is interesting. It's all the northern border states that seem to be willing to vote for the independents, but maybe there's something cleaner in their water than ours down here.
Or maybe because they still, you know, they've still got that bottom up political philosophy of, you know, town meetings where everybody gets to go and have a say and things like that. Real democracy is catching, Spike.
Yeah, I mean that's why I laugh at it kills me. You know, I know a lot of. Someone I know you really don't like for what he does in politics and all with Nader, but in the same. Yeah, if you think about it, if he was in the debates with Obama, that would also be someone else piling onto McCain throughout. You know, if you had even
well,
a libertarian
see,
in there,
I would.
It would still be somebody. You know, another thought, another voice, and on the top of that all, another person pointing out some of the more issues. You know, I mean, that's why the vice presidential debate was such a joke. essentially. It's just it's a sham debate, really, that what it's not now. So I'm certainly for the League of Women Voters being in charge and more voices being allowed in as well, and from all different, you know, not just one other independent. You know, put a whole load of people in there. Make more discussion, not more talking points and soundbites.
The remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech.
Yeah.
And that goes a long way back. I think that was from correspondence between Judge Learned Hand and Oliver Wendell Holmes way back in the day. And I tend to agree with it. On the other hand, I don't have any problem with Ralph's policies. And I don't have any problem with his advocacy. I really, really don't. But to the extent that he would just stand up there and tell the American people that there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and I understand that there are reasons why he said that before,
It depends.
I can't afford that right now. And I know that makes maybe that makes me sound like a hypocrite. I can't afford that right now. I respect the daylights out of Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah.
But daggum, there's one of two people is going to win this race, and maybe that's just too politically stodgily real on my part, Spike. That one of two people is going to win this race.
Well, this is the first time I haven't worked for a Nader for President campaign in a presidential election year. I got to say, you know, I'm going to vote for Obama, but
I'd like
he's
him
really
to
aggravating me lately with some like his ads calling universal health care the extreme left. That is a
that's BS pure and simple.
Yeah, that makes me want to just go in and vote for Nader again. I mean, he's almost chasing away the people that are just voting to finally clear
between what the Fed did 2.5 weeks ago and what we did last week and the $30 billion that we quietly and nobody's willing to talk about it. Did a deal with on Bear Stearns, that's enough to pay for universal health care. I mean, it really, really is.
Yeah, or for that matter, you know, the money we're spending bogged down in Iraq, not to mention more money we'll have to spend soon since things are escalating in Afghanistan, flying right under the mainstream media's radar for the most part. There's many things we could do to pay for it easily, you know.
I'm enough of a paranoid that I think that that's part and parcel of the reasoning behind the invasion and occupation of places like Iraq and Afghanistan, because we were in the best financial health in this country that we have been in a generation when Bill Clinton left office, and that money had to be made to go away, and when the tax cuts didn't succeed. You know, the tax cuts for the richest 1% of the country that controls 90% of the wealth. When those tax cuts didn't do the job, the Repiglicans, the Bush administration, started looking around for ways to bleed the economy so that we could make sure that none of that creeping socialism, that health care, ever came to people who actually needed it.
I mean, when his father even ran the country, there was a deficit. Nowhere near like this, but there was a deficit then as well. Yeah, and... Well, back in the good old days, though, Dick Cheney hadn't fallen off his rocker and also...
Sure shot anybody in the face. I know.
Peppered his load on someone's face with his shotgun and...
And then made the guy who got shot apologize. Oh, I remember well.
By the way, the vice presidents for years, it seems, without maybe Al Gore's side, have been some great... comedy material probably for the past...
Oh, Dan Quayle, George Bush...
Yeah.
Spiro Agnew, you know, I use that phrase from time to time on the program, Spike, you know, nattering nabobs of negativity. That was a phrase that was invented by Spiro T. Agnew.
Yeah. Rockefeller with his salute. So
Rockefeller dying doing it, you know, God. You know, when the mistress called the cops to come get his cooling body, the newspaper in his hands was upside down and his shoes were on the wrong feet. You know, he came and went at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Before Viagra, no less.
Yeah, no, hey, God bless you. Yeah.
Yeah. But
Nelson didn't look like it, but he must have been one more right-wing stud muffin. Now, they called him a moderate Republican, didn't they? He was a liberal Republican.
Yeah. Yeah, they used to be a day when there were a few liberals in the Republican Party. Matter of fact, the last one to be in the Senate was unseated by, of all people, Joe Lieberman way back when. The name... I always forget the name when I need to remember it.
Yeah. You talking about Weicker?
It might have been. I'm sure if I wasn't lazy and I...
Well, you know, Lincoln Chafee billed himself as a liberal Republican, and he lost to his Democratic challenger in 2006, and he lost based on... he lost because of other Republicans' conduct more than he lost because of his own.
He was the lone Republican against invasion, was he not? Or
might be. I don't.
Who was the lone Republican that voted the no vote on the invasion?
It might have been him. I can't remember offhand.
Yeah, That's the other sad part. The only one that stood up his own party, he lost the seat for it.
Yeah, so I got to roll along here in a sec, but I need some playoff predictions from you, Spike.
All right, Phillies in six, and I'm not sure how long it'll take for the Red Sox to be done with their series, but the Rays will beat the Red Sox. I'm calling for a Phillies-Rays World Series.
Are you really?
Yeah, kind of two totally different, you know, one of the oldest teams versus one of the newer teams, essentially. So.
They are the newest team, aren't they? I mean, not counting the Nationals, because they moved the Nationals from Montreal. But
Yeah. The Rays, they're about 10 years old now. But, yeah, and the same, the Rays are a really talented young team.
Oh, yes, they are.
So I've only heard about them until now. They weren't on national TV all year, so it's exciting to watch.
All right, I've got you down for Phillies and Rays, and who does it in how many?
Oh, that'll be the Phillies because they'll hit way more home runs. Probably a 5-game series.
Phillies in five. You heard it here first, folks.
So, but yeah, and then real quick again, just Spike Rogan,
sure.
Spike Rogan, Rogan, SpikeRogan.blogspot.com. Check out the links to the story. Check out the huge racist remarks from commenters at the Pocono Records website as well. It's another shameful part of the story.
Ugh.
You know, latent racism. They don't use the actual N-word, but it's pretty pathetic how
right-wingers. We speak the code. Yeah, SpikeRogan.blogspot.com, right?
Yep, and there's even a link to the horn there. So you
can bless your heart.
Back to this website.
All right, thanks so much, Spike, and take care.
Hey, you too.
All right, and bye now. Wrong button there, Bob. Spike has a lot of good ideas. SpikeRogan.blogspot.com. I do encourage you to go by and have a look. Let's see. Let's keep things rolling here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty tired. We made a trip, left out, go to Richmond this morning at 3 o'clock, and just got back this evening. I'm about had enough for the day.
About wore out, I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate the comments that your friend there made. He's going to be right on target. But I want to talk on
Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
You talking about a bitch. Now, boy, you know, that woman is a real dingbat.
And a hateful one at that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she is full of crap up to her eyes. It's a wonder they don't turn brown instead of blue. But I'm so sick of hearing her and the kind of rhetoric that she puts out that it, you know, to accuse... It looks to me like I know that they leave herself open for any kind of thing when they run for office. But this character assassination like she's doing, you know, calling him basically saying he's a terrorist.
Well, and then, you know, that plays into the racist playbook that the Repiglicans were going to pull out all along. It's not like we're surprised, is it, Ed? I mean, we knew this was going to happen.
Well, I remember when they both talked about running a decent campaign.
But yeah, McCain, but we knew that McCain was lying his ass off on that, didn't we?
Well,
when's the last time a Republican ran a decent campaign?
I can't remember one, but he. I just thought maybe that he might have enough honor left in him to keep his word on that. But I'll bet you that if Obama don't lift him off that stage tomorrow night, then he ought to lose. But tell you the truth, I'm disappointed in both of them. I never did have much, you know, a whole lot for McCain, but Obama is not got all the strength that a president should have.
And, I was going to ask, you're disturbed by Obama because you want to see more fight out of him. Do I have that right?
You're exactly right. I want to, you know, if somebody hits you, you hit them harder. And that's the way I believe a fight should go, instead of, you know, they're not keeping it clean, and they're doing that bickering so much that they're not getting all the things that's wrong with this nation before the public. And the thing of it is, we got a record number of turnouts and registration, and people are, they're confusing people so much they don't know what to do. I've already heard some people that just registered say that they weren't even going to vote, that they felt like they wasted their time to register.
Holy Moses.
So I'm just disappointed in the political arena and the ramifications of it now. Obama's just been too gentle, too nice, and concentrated on the points, really. I mean, he's tried to present to people with what's real, and only the smart ones, which this is a land of ignorance, and you know that. You know, you may not like to say it because you got your show, but...
Well, no. This audience is as smart as a whip. But I'm not talking to, apparently I'm not talking to those hockey moms that the Sarah Palin's daggone fond of.
Yeah. Well, I listened to an interview where they had four hockey moms together, I think it was out of Georgia, and only one of them was against her. And I'm just glad we don't have more hockey in the United States. All the hockey comes out of her mouth, don't it?
Yeah, and it's the bull variety.
Yeah, but I just don't know what with this country and the kind of shape it is. Bob, I really don't believe that people see the depth that this country has sank. You know, I'm talking about the economy and the after effects of it, and I don't think $700 billion is the answer to pulling it out. And, you know, the problem of it is I'm not intelligent enough to figure out what it is going to take. You know, are we, and I ask you this, are we down the drain or not?
That's a question for the ages right now, Ed. And, you know, I frame it in terms of, can this be fixed? I know this much. If old 894, John McHoover, if he is elected president of the United States, then yes, we are down the drain. We're done.
Yeah.
Because he will then, I mean, I call him McHoover for a reason. Everything that doesn't need to be done to help, everything that shouldn't be done with regard to the economy will be. And then the real hell is going to break wide open. Can we fix it with a Democratic majority in Congress and a Democratic president? I know this much. It's the only hope we've got.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you, when you got bitches, you know, and I say that with venom, like Nancy Pelosi, as far as I'm concerned, she's a traitor to the Democratic Party. And I held her so high, her and Boxer and people like that.
Well, and Barbara Boxer is still decent, a relatively decent human being.
But I just put them all in the same category. And Harry Reid, I can't say what I'd like to say about him on the air. He is about a spineless, mealy mouth. And we just don't have any gutsy people to stand up and fight like hard-nosed people that are for other people should be doing. I don't know what to think. I thought I knew a little bit about politics.
Well, we've created a political culture and climate, Ed, that doesn't allow the people that you're talking about to reach office. And I put it this way: ask yourself, would Harry S. Truman have a snowball's chance in hell of getting elected senator from the state of Missouri in 2008? What would the right-wing slime and smear machine do to Harry S. Truman? Stupid old hat salesman.
Yeah.
Klansman. Oh, they'd tar him with every filthy brush that they had. And, you know, I don't care how much fight you've got, why should a person who has a family and who loves that family subject that family to this kind of deviltry? Dennis Kucinich ran, and, you know, by the time they were done with him, you would have thought that he was absolutely, undeniably just crazy.
And you know what? People still don't know him. They don't. You know, it's like...
And yet that's the only guy who has spoken anything resembling... Well, okay, there are a couple others. But for the most part, Dennis Kucinich is the only one who's spoken anything resembling common sense with regard to this this Wall Street heist, this mugging we've been put through.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like your friend that's running for governor, Jesse...
Johnson.
Johnson. I've been talking to, I've talked to a couple of my friends about him. And I can't believe it. Some of them's going to vote like they're voting, because we have nothing in either one of the other one. You call him minded or a slime ball that's governor now.
We all know that Joe Manchin's marking time till he can figure out a way to get Byrd's Senate seat.
Mm-hmm. Well. I can't say that I think any more burden than I do him. Bert's helped some individuals and so forth, but he's in my book anyway, because I think I'm ultra liberal compared to the kind of people we're putting in.
No, without any doubt, Ed.
I don't like Byrd. I never have. When I was the political director for UAW, we had a meeting with him, me and Shirley Love and Tom Bell and several of them, and we confronted him on an issue. I might have spoke to you about it before, about imports and how they affected the worker and to give them extended benefits, which that's a rubber crutch because the exports weren't coming back to start with. So a temporary extension of those benefits didn't help too much. And when I told him about the TRA, that's the initials of the bill that was to take care of this and extend the benefits, that's the least we could do. He was so stupid he didn't even know what it was, and it was before him right then. And I had his aide or whatever follow me outside and wanted my phone number and who it was and stuff like that, because I got up and he said, well, I think I'll do a little fiddling. And I told him then, I said, well, you've done enough fiddling for me. And so when I went outside, this guy followed me, and he wanted my number. I said, you don't need my number. The main thing is I got yours. And
a little bit more of that, and we might be a little bit more assured of turning things around, Ed.
Well, Bob, for the first time in my life, and you know I've been in politics and associated with it for 30 years, I have never been scared before like I am now. And it's not just my money going down the drain.
It's your country.
Yeah. And the people, the suffering that people is going to go through with over that bastard in Washington now. If they don't try him for war crimes and crimes against humanity, you know, that would be an encouragement to show that we want the right thing. But they're just going to say, well, we got too much to do to bring this country back to where it needs to be, rather than fight with people like him. But
how's this? The country needs to heal. We've got to move on.
I'm not sure that the
I mean, I can hear that being said.
Yeah. I'm not so sure that we haven't bled so much that we're not going to get over. And I'm serious.
I understand, Ed, and I'm serious too. But all I do know is the Republicans getting into the White House will just throw the last spade full of dirt on our collective coffin.
Mm-hmm.
We may get a shovel to start digging out of the trench with the Democrats, and I say may. I don't say will. I say may.
I talked to people in Virginia, and even they are smarter than we are. They're closer to blue than what this state is. And of all the things that the West Virginians have been put through over the years, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, all the way back to in the 50s when the coal companies was, you didn't know till the day you before whether he's going to work the next day or not. I remember those things. Well, we've got orders for 3 coal cars full of coal, and they'd get to work 1 and 2 days a week, and that was them good old eyes and higher times. And it's, you know, we're back there basically now. And, you know, I'm sure you know what kind of economic condition we're in. It's like going to the store and asking them to charge something when they know you're not going to have any money ever to back it up again. And it's showing up when the people's trying to use their credit cards and stuff right now. Some of them still can't use their credit card.
It's a mess. It's a mess, Ed. Sadly, Ed, I've run out of time.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the... what part I got to hear tonight.
Well, I hope you're doing all right after your trip to Richmond.
Oh, yeah. For the old man, it's not too bad. I'll talk to you about it.
All right. Ed, you take care. Keep setting them up and knocking them down.
Yeah, well, you don't know who to knock down. There's many of them.
pick one and work through the lot.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thank you for your time.
You take care, Ed.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I got the here there tonight.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
We said hi.
Sure will. That's our buddy Ed calling from here in Fayette County. And that's the end of the program. I certainly hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did bringing it to you. Please join us again tomorrow evening at the same time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here, headonradionetwork.com. Many thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, our chief engineer, musician-in-chief, webmaster, etc. Man wears many hats, John Fox in Sydney, Australia. The hardest working man in liberal talk is Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He literally saved liberal talk on the internet, Ben did, with WhiteRoseSociety.org. And like all of us, he needs your help. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know.